Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
After a quick trip to the edge of space, Amazon's founder Jeff Bezos is back on Earth. There were cheers, but also sighs of relief from Amazon's board of directors. An unexpected injury or death to a top executive like Bezos could throw a company like Amazon into turmoil. But as NPR's David Gurr reports, there isn't much they can do to rein in the risk-taking.
A few years before Mark Bertolini became the head of the health insurance company Aetna, he went skiing in Vermont.
I was looking over my shoulder, checking on something, and I caught an edge and hit a tree and slipped headfirst 60 feet down into a river.
Bertolini was in a coma. He'd broken his spine in five places. And there's been a long, difficult recovery. But the insurance executive did not give up skiing. He's also someone who loves motorcycles. Bertolini owns three Harley-Davidsons and a Ducati.
When I first was named CEO and chairman and was asked to look at a contract, they had skiing and motorcycling in there as exclusions, and I told them that that wouldn't work for me.
During those negotiations, Bertolini pushed back, and they relented.
I said that, you know, I would continue to be careful and take the appropriate precautions, but my life was my life, and I wasn't willing to give those up.
Many executives play golf and tennis, but some like to push the envelope. Going to space is something Jeff Bezos has wanted to do for years. Bloomberg TV interviewed him after the trip.
Honestly, I'm not talented enough to describe this in words. I can't figure it out. It was much more than I expected. It's awe-inspiring.
Richard Branson, the founder of the Virgin Group, has tried to circle the Earth in a hot air balloon. And about a week and a half ago, he went to space. Here's Branson on CNN.
It was just like the most incredible dream. And we're all so lucky to have been able to participate in it.
Company founders seem to feel especially empowered to do what they want to do. On the 4th of July, Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg posted a video. It's him riding a hydrofoil surfboard holding an American flag. Hillary Sale is a professor of law and management at Georgetown University, and she says risk-taking can lead to tension between a board and executives.
At what point does their obligation to, in particular, a publicly traded company eclipse their sense of personal freedom, and at what point does the board need to speak to them about that?
A board is supposed to put a company's best interests first, and when a CEO does something dangerous, the board knows that also puts at risk investors and employees who depend on that business for their livelihood. In 2012, the CEO of Micron Technology died piloting a plane, and although the company named a new CEO days later, the stock didn't recover for about a year. Boards can make recommendations, they can take out extra insurance and add restrictions to contracts, but enforcement is uneven. Robert Lutz was a top executive at GM, Ford, and Chrysler.
I will tell you, I encountered these restrictions my whole career, never took them very seriously, and got away with it for 47 years.
He also liked skiing and motorcycles, and Lutz owned and flew two fighter planes. When GM wanted Lutz back for another big job in 2001, this came up. And Lutz remembers what he told the board.
I'm happy to rejoin the company. I'm happy to assume the post as vice chairman, but I need absolute freedom as far as my hobbies are concerned.
Lutz says he got that absolute freedom. And he flew those jets until he was 87, by the way. He had to stop 2 years ago when he failed an eye exam. Lutz thinks more executives should be daredevils.
As opposed to, you know, calm, peaceful guys who never want to put themselves at risk, always drive at the speed limit, drive a minivan as their only vehicle and so forth. Who the heck wants a person like that to lead a corporation or be in a leadership position at a corporation?
These days, Mark Bertolini is retired from Aetna, and he's still skiing and riding motorcycles, and he also believes leaders should take more risks. But now Bertolini sits on a handful of corporate boards. He's on the other side of the table, and that has given him a better appreciation for the challenges a board would face with a risk-taking CEO.
You never want to be in a place where that person is indispensable to the success of the company, nor do you want it, if it's publicly traded, to have a huge impact on market cap.
That's why CEO succession planning is so important. Bertolini says when he was running Aetna, he had a conversation about it at each and every board meeting. David Gura, NPR News, New York.
As of this morning, more than 161 million Americans are fully vaccinated against the coronavirus. That's a lot of people, but it's still less than half of those who are eligible in this country. The Delta variant is causing a surge, and again, healthcare professionals are seeing it first. Throughout the pandemic, we've talked a few times to Dr. Jamil Mahdi. He's the chief of critical care medicine at Valley Baptist Medical Center in Harlingen, Texas, and he's with us again. Good morning, Dr. Mahdi.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
We're very happy to have you. When we talked a year ago, you said the hospital was at capacity. You had makeshift units all over the place. What's it like now? How you doing?
Well, we're definitely in a different place today than we were a year ago. There is a slight uptick of the hospitalizations in the last few weeks that we've had. But of course, nothing compared to what we had last year. But we had our lowest numbers around a couple of months ago, back in May, April and May. And then we started seeing a rise in the number in the last several weeks. And obviously, most likely due to the Delta variant. So we've almost doubled our census in all the hospitals that I work in the Valley, in the Rio Grande Valley.
How concerned are you about the Delta variant?
I'm somewhat concerned. It seems that this virus, according to the initial studies, is more contagious than the mother virus. But there's no data that says that it's more virulent or more deadly. Yet we are seeing patients that are coming into the hospital, some of them very sick and ending up in the units.
Okay. Are you seeing people hospitalized for COVID-19 who have gotten the vaccine?
We do, very rarely, but we do. The ratio is around, you know, for every 20 patients that are being admitted to the hospitals, there's one patient that gets admitted that has been vaccinated.
One person in 20 who's coming to the hospital now has been fully vaccinated. I know our listeners will be very curious about this. Are the symptoms of those people who've been vaccinated less severe than folks who haven't been?
Good question. So far, because we have so few numbers, the patients that did come in seem to have a less severe disease than the ones that are not.
Okay.
But there are too many variables among that.
And does 1 in 20 being fully vaccinated, does that surprise you? I mean, it was always said that the vaccine was not 100% effective, but I wonder if 1 in 20 seems high to you, or how you're processing this number.
Well, you understand that the Delta variant, according to the CDC and to the recent studies, that the efficacy of the vaccines has gone down from around 95% to probably around 88%, mm-hmm. which is still high.
Yeah.
So you still have another 12% of the population that will not be affected by the vaccine and will not have that immunity. So I'm not surprised by that number. That number seems to be adequate.
Okay.
What I'm surprised by is the number of patients that are coming in that are not vaccinated, mm-hmm. that are very sick.
Okay. And I wonder, when you and other doctors there ask people, why didn't you get the vaccine? What do they tell you?
Well, you know, the issue is, the excuses are they didn't get a chance to get to it, or they don't believe in the vaccine, or they're vaccine shy. Or they've heard this or heard that about the vaccine, and the vaccine has side effects, and they don't want to try the vaccine. So we got different discussions about the vaccine, and everyone has their own excuse about why did they not take their vaccines.
And when you're presented, or when you encounter an individual who shares misinformation with you and says, this is the reason I'm not going to be vaccinated, how do you handle that? What does the conversation sound like from there?
It's not an easy conversation,
okay.
because at that time, you know, the patients are sick and we want to deal with what they're going through right
yeah.
now. So we don't want to go into a discussion that might not lead anywhere. We have to deal with what's going on and dealing with their underlying active disease. The discussions should actually be made in the clinics, in the public arena, rather than in the patients being already in the hospital. You don't want them to feel, some of them feel somewhat guilty about, you know, not having the vaccine.
Sure.
And ending up the way they did.
That is entirely understandable. Let me ask you about guidance at the national level. The CDC's guidance since May has been that fully vaccinated people don't have to wear face masks or socially distance in most settings. Now, we've had public health officials on our air say that is something they may reconsider given how transmissible the Delta variant is. What do you think about the masking guidance as it stands?
I think we should continue with it. I think the problem that we had with the guidance is that it flip-flopped a little bit. Mm. And when you flip-flop some guidance, people get confused. And then they decide, okay, well, which is true? What do we need to do? It's too confusing for us. So if you stick to one prospect of doing things, then people will go ahead and follow that. I think masking is important, especially at this time, especially that the vaccine is not as efficacious as it is with the mother virus.
Okay. Dr. Jamil Mahdi is Chief of Critical Care Medicine at Valley Baptist Medical Center in Harlingen, Texas. Thank you so much, Dr. Mahdi, for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
For years, advocates have been calling for changes in training, wages, and supports for home health aides. They're the ones who assist elderly and disabled residents, allowing them to remain at home, but they're among the most invisible healthcare workers. The American Jobs Plan, the infrastructure bill currently being negotiated in Congress, calls for a $400 billion infusion of federal dollars into the nation's care economy. This could help transform the industry, Kavita Cardoso reports.
Most older Americans want to age at home. Many can do so only because of the more than 2 million home health aides who provide day-to-day support and fill in for overwhelmed or absent relatives. But there's a severe shortage of these workers that's expected to grow far worse. Kezia Scales with PHI, a nonprofit that advocates for home health aides, says that's because the jobs are exhausting, with low wages, little respect, and almost no career growth.
And so we end up having a fairly unstable workforce with high levels of turnover and job vacancies, not because people don't want to do this work, but because they can't afford to do this work.
Scales points to a model that PHI helps fund that she says has been very successful. It's called Cooperative Home Care Associates in New York, where Tashauna Vivas is filling up a plastic basin of warm water. She's one of a dozen students in this class training to be a home health aide. Yesterday, they watched a demonstration of a bed bath. Today, students fully clothed are practicing on each other.
I'm nervous. Just to do the whole procedure. I stayed up to 2 o'clock studying.
Vivas works her way down the body with a yellow washcloth.
Okay, washing the legs now.
Instructor Andrea Sharper watches carefully as Vivas cleans a body part, wipes it dry, and covers it back up with a towel.
In between the toes is very important, right? Especially a diabetic client.
Bed bath is a basic skill for home health aides. They also learn how to safely turn someone to prevent bed sores, what a normal blood pressure reading is, and when changes in urine color might indicate a health problem. At the end of class, Vivas looks proud of herself.
I'm okay. My back is a little busted, but it'll be okay.
This training program is considered one of the best in the country. It's also free, funded by private and government money. Student Jahali Abreu says other programs were all insanely expensive, often run by for-profits charging $1,000 or $2,000.
The classes cost so much money, and I was like, okay, I can't afford that, because not everybody has that kind of money.
Like students in this program, the vast majority of home health aides are women, people of color, and immigrants. Matt Siegelman, CEO of the job market analytics company MC Burning Glass, says the median wage for a home health aide is $24,000 a year.
For perspective, that's only about $500 more per year than your average fast food cook. So the notion of taking out a loan, going into debt to get into a job that pays you the same as you would make in a fast food restaurant is pretty hard to swallow.
He says it's unlikely students will be able to pay back those loans even after they start working, trapping them on a low-wage treadmill. Abreu was delighted to learn she could get a job with this organization as soon as she graduated the one-month course.
Literally the week after, you're already working. So that's also something that made me want to choose this company.
She would also receive paid leave and health insurance, benefits that are virtually unheard of in this field. But home health aides, even here, make only minimum wage, primarily because of the reimbursement rates for Medicaid and Medicare. Paul Osterman, an MIT professor and author of the book Who Will Care for Us, says home health aides are very restricted in what they can do for their elderly and disabled clients. By law, for example, they can only remind a client to take their medication. They can't actually give it to them. Osterman argues for better training and expanded duties for home health aides, which he believes will help the elderly manage chronic conditions and stay out of hospital.
That would also save money, and to some extent taking over some of the work for much higher paid nurses. So that would then create savings, which could then be used in part to pay for the higher wages.
Every student in this class wants to move up in the healthcare field. And unlike their counterparts in private agencies, they have career counselors here who can guide them, and their union will pay for additional training. Student Ashauna Vivas hopes one day she'll be a nursing assistant.
I enjoy helping people, taking care of people, because I'm going to need somebody need to take care of me too.
For NPR News, I'm Kavita Cardoso.
Summer tourist towns often spend big on advertising to bring in the crowds that local businesses need to survive. But in one Colorado resort town, the labor and housing crisis is so bad that the town decided to stop marketing. From member station KBUT, Chad Rich reports.
The last steep bar and grill in Crested Butte, Colorado is bustling. This time of year, the town is full of tourists and second homeowners. But bar owner Kevin Hartigan says he can't find enough staff.
I don't think we've had someone come in and apply for a kitchen job since maybe March.
That means this summer, his restaurant has to be closed twice a week.
Staffing is so hard because there's no place for him to live. There's just not housing.
About half of the restaurants here are now closed several days per week or closed altogether. And this is peak season, when Hartigan estimates his restaurant makes 30 to 40% of its annual revenue over a few summer months.
Financially, it's a huge hit.
Affordable housing has long been a problem in mountain resort towns, with vacation rentals overtaking housing workers live in. The pandemic made it worse, as people who came here to work remotely stayed. So this summer, the agency in charge of marketing to tourists stopped. John Norton is the agency's director.
Well, we don't want to throw gasoline on a fire. Hopefully, it's going to turn the dial down on the intensity.
But Sam Degenhard, who runs a private campground, thinks it's a bad decision.
My first reaction was, how long is this going to happen? As a seasonal business, I'm only open in the summer.
Degenhard's guests, and anyone staying in short-term rentals here, pays a 4% lodging tax that pays for marketing. If the marketing agency isn't advertising, he says he's got to pay for that out of his own pocket.
My opinion in terms of the pause in marketing is that it mostly will have an impact to small businesses that don't have the resources to reach national and regional level marketing spends.
Most Crested Butte businesses are on board with at least temporarily pausing tourist advertising. Other Rockies resort towns wrestling with the same affordable housing and workforce challenges are also rethinking marketing, says Margaret Bowes with the Colorado Association of Ski Towns.
There are so many visitors that it results in traffic congestion and parking and two-hour waits at restaurants and overcrowding and overuse at trailheads. And so more is not always better is what a lot of these communities are finding.
But Bose says no other town has gone as far as Crested Butte.
I did a quick poll of my membership, and I did not find any other members that have full-on halted their summer advertising and marketing. But absolutely, there is a strong trend towards reducing the investment.
John Norton, the local tourism promoter, says that he still expects to advertise Crested Butte as a winter destination this year. But going forward, there are no plans set in stone for the busier months when it's warm.
If we've still got the housing problem that we've got going on now, if that hasn't been substantially solved, I think there's an argument to make that we skip another summer.
For NPR News, I'm Chad Rich in Crested Butte, Colorado.
Something has to change. That's a line you will hear a lot from workers at American restaurants and bars for whom the pandemic became a turning point. Hundreds of thousands of them left their pre-pandemic jobs in pursuit of better pay and benefits, and many left food service altogether. NPR's Alina Selyuk reports.
A wooden spoon gliding over cast iron. Lamar Cornett was barely tall enough to see over the stove, watching his mother, a cook, make his favorite dish. Scrambled eggs, a classic beginning of a lifelong journey in food.
One of my favorite things in the entire world, one of the few things that makes me feel genuinely like great, is making food for my friends and like seeing them eat it and enjoy it.
Cornett has worked in restaurants in Kentucky over 20 years. Short of owning one, he's done it all. Server, dishwasher, prep cook, line cook, kitchen manager. The work is grueling and tense, but rewarding and rowdy and so fast-paced that the pandemic shutdown was like lightning on a cloudy day.
It was almost like there was this unplanned, unorganized general strike.
Out on unemployment for a few weeks, Cornett made enough money through benefits to start saving for the first time. And he had a moment to ponder the realities of his work.
I genuinely can't remember a single break that I've ever taken that lasted longer than the time it takes to use the bathroom or smoke a cigarette. I've never sat down to eat a meal. I've never had health insurance. I was working what I had decided was going to be my last kitchen job.
In fact, workers are leaving jobs in restaurants, bars, and hotels at a highest rate in decades. Each month so far this year, around 5% of this massive workforce have called it quits. That's left over a million jobs unfilled in the industry, right when customers are crushing through the doors, ready to eat, drink, and finally socialize.
We used to be known as a late-night restaurant, so we'd be open from 11:30 in the morning to 11:30 at night. We can't do that anymore. I don't have the staff and people are exhausted.
Lori Torres owns Mallorca Restaurant in Cleveland, which she's now closing on Mondays and shut down for the 4th of July for the first time in 25 years. She says she's been paying her staff bonuses and even offered $17 an hour for a dishwasher job, and still three people stood her up. In one recent survey, more than half of hospitality workers who've quit said no amount of pay would get them to return. That's because for many, leaving food service also had a lot to do with its culture. Aggressive bosses, no benefits, constantly changing schedules, and so many rude customers.
It's like they're just yelling the entire time.
Marcus Brotherin spent 2 years at Dunkin' Donuts in Rhode Island. In busiest hours, he's seen drive-through customers storm inside to complain about the wrong amount of creamer or sugar. Brotherin's left this spring for a job delivering beverages to restaurants. Work that's tough, but quieter and better paying.
Oh, I am done with fast food. Like, I never want to do something like this again.
Trying to overcome this attitude and racing to staff back up, companies are trying things like recruiting on TikTok or paying people just to show up for interviews. Major chains have also been trumpeting higher wages. Chipotle is raising its minimum to average $15 an hour. McDonald's is also promising entry-level pay between $11 and $17 an hour. In fact, for the first time on record, average hourly pay for non-managers at restaurants and bars topped $15 in May. Jeanette Wexlim is a labor economist at the University of Massachusetts Amherst.
This is an industry that's been plagued with low wages for an extraordinary long period of time.
Pay barely began to rise before the pandemic, then fell again. So she says now workers are just making up lost ground. Wages might be jumping fast, but not that far. Lamar Cornett, the lifelong restaurant worker from Kentucky, has watched the wage issue get tense on his local food service Facebook group. Any job posting below $15 an hour gets jeers and demands for higher wages. Then the employers get defensive.
They would always be like, oh, well, we can't afford to pay people that much. The immediate response every time was, then you can't afford to be in business, bro.
Cornett was planning to hang up his apron and looking at jobs at warehouses and factories when he got an offer he couldn't turn down from someone who could afford to be in business and pay him better. he's now a chef at a new brewery.
Currently, I'm making the most money I've ever made, and I make $30,000 a year, which isn't a lot. But when you've spent your whole life making $22,000-$23,000 a year, you know, that's some life-changing.
It's actually the first time he's ever had a salary, steady money he can count on week to week. The first time he's had only one boss, whom he likes. And finally, health insurance. Alina Salyuk, NPR News.
Assalamu alaikum.
Black, Muslim workers accuse team leader of using racial slurs at Tyson plant in NC. Two former employees at a Tyson chicken plant in North Carolina said they were repeatedly called a racial slur by a team leader during their 4 years of employment.
Nigga!
The employees, a married couple who are black and Muslim, accused Tyson Farms Incorporated of violating the Civil Rights Act by allowing management to discriminate against employees and retaliate against those who complained of mistreatment. Tyson Farms operates a Tyson Foods chicken processing plant in Wilkesboro, where the couple previously worked. In a statement to McClatchy News, a representative for Tyson Foods declined to comment on pending litigation but said the company values diversity. At Tyson Foods, we value the enormous diversity of our team members and we continue to work hard to create an inclusive environment where everyone is and feels safe and respected, the company said. We also have a policy against workplace discrimination and harassment and will not tolerate any action that violates them. An attorney representing the former employees did not immediately respond to a request for comment Monday. The lawsuit was first filed April 22 in the Superior Court Division of Forsyth County, court filings show. But Tyson's defense attorney had the case moved to the Middle District of North Carolina on Friday, saying the claims under the Civil Rights Act of 1964 fall under federal, not state, jurisdiction. According to the complaint, Adrian and Michelle Switzer live in Forsyth County and worked in the thigh fillet department at Tyson Farms Fresh Plant, deboning and trimming chicken thighs from the spring of 2015 to mid-2019. During that time, their attorney said in court filings, Tyson Farms required strict company loyalty and discouraged discussing employment matters with outsiders, creating a strong fear among workers who believed they would lose their jobs if they complained about conditions at the plant. The Switzer's team leader was a white woman who worked with the department supervisor to assign jobs, monitor productivity, and give employees protective equipment such as aprons, eye goggles and gloves, the complaint states. But according to the lawsuit, she had an innate predisposition to hate black people and Muslims, reportedly telling a supervisor on one occasion that these, N-words, are just trashy, no good people. One day, the Switzer's attorney said, she overheard them talking to a coworker about not eating pork. The team leader interjected herself in the conversation, her facial expression changed disapprovingly and she asked, y'all Muslim? And repeatedly questioned the plaintiffs after they affirmed that they were, as if it were the worst thing in the world, as to why they would want to be or become a Muslim, the complaint states. Her attitude toward the Switzers reportedly worsened after that encounter. According to the complaint, the team leader repeatedly referred to them using a racial slur, saying things such as I'm sick of you, N-word, hurry up, N-word, and what are you looking at, N-word. The Switzers complained about her behavior to their supervisor, human resources, the insurance department, facility management, and the Tyson Farms 800 employee HIP line, but nothing happened. Then, on April 20, 2019, Michelle Switzer was fired. Her attorney said it was because of her race, religion and retaliation for her prior complaints of racial and religious discrimination. Adrian Switzer quit shortly thereafter, citing the team leader's pervasive racial hostility toward him, the lawsuit states. The couple filed charges of discrimination with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission in July 2019. The EEOC issued a right to sue notice in January, saying there was reasonable cause to believe certain violations occurred but they weren't able to obtain a settlement with Tyson. This does not mean that the EEOC is certifying that the respondent is in compliance with the law, or that the EEOC will not sue the respondent later or intervene later in your lawsuit if you decide to sue on your own behalf, the letter stated. The Switzers asked for a jury trial and at least $25,000 in compensatory and punitive damages as well as attorney's fees. Tyson has not responded to the allegations, federal court filings show.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, July 23, 2021. So I have been told. Wow, it has been a horrendous day, week, month, year. I guess to be expected in the system. This is our weekly broadcast, Neutralizing Workplace Racism, trying to figure out constructive, logical strategies to neutralize some of the problems we experience in the workplace. Trying to solve problems without creating new problems is always the metric. If we have folks, if you have figured out any tips might be helpful, policy and procedure around the whole COVID situation, if it's tips on dealing with folks, if they're going to be name calling you and all the rest, heard a little bit of that in the segment. If we have tips, we had folks who spoke with us last week and saying, hey, I want to ask about a hybrid workplace setup in terms of you go into the office, physical office, maybe 2-3 times for the week, and then you're at home the rest of the time. I want to ask for that. What's the best procedure for that? Super important. If we have any listeners who figured out anything helpful on those topics or other work-related issues, the number to dial, not to spectate, to share is 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. As always, you can dial in if you have an issue, a problem, and you would like tips maybe on better ways of addressing your situation, again, without creating new problems. Number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Quickly with the news segments, there were so many news reports, it could have easily, and this has been the case really since the pandemic started last year, there has been so much more talking about even that R word I don't like to use. I would say maybe even a revolution, so-called, in the workplace, in that so much upheaval with the virus and people being at home and not working or working remotely for a long period of time. We heard the reports about people not returning to the workplace for certain jobs, spade work that they say, you know, I don't want to come back and do this, you know, no count job for $8 an hour or less, maybe. So much the vaccines, the hybrid workplace, and people saying now I'm going to be at home permanently. Where I moved, you heard some of that in the segment, people saying, hey, we like it out here. We're going to move to Wyoming. We don't want to be in this crowded, congested city around all these folks. We want a little bit more space. So I'm going to be out here in Wyoming doing this job remotely every day. It has been amazing. We didn't even get to all of the reports. Like, we didn't even get to Rachel Nichols. There were tons of reports that I didn't even include that just continued in talking about the different types of impacts that all of this has had on the workplace. That's not even including George Floyd and the tacky component we got to talk about, racism and all that. Like I said, Rachel Nichols and all the rest of it. So, wow. If any component of that is impacting your workplace, if you're one of those folks who said, hey, I don't even think I want to go back to my job. You know, if you got furloughed or had to stay at home for a while, if you're one of the folks who, hey, they made us, we used to have to come in 5 days a week, now we come in 2 days a week. Any of that. The vaccine mandate, we didn't even talk about that. Had numerous reports talking about how different cities, I think San Francisco is one, Pasadena I think is another one, that are requiring city employees, it will be mandatory. You have to be vaccinated come this autumn once the FDA gives approval to one of the vaccines. Mandatory, and if you don't get vaccinated, you'll be fired. Lots more places saying that, especially over the past couple weeks since they've been saying, uh-oh, the dreaded Delta variant, increase in cases. Lots more talk about aggressively requiring mandates for folks, stragglers, as they say. Let's see, with the specific reports that we did hear, wow. So We started off with the report, all the serious things that I just mentioned. We start off with Jeff Bezos going to the moon, leaving Earth, going to see ET, catch you folks later. Reckless behavior of corporate bosses. They were saying now, these folks, they tried to put in rules like you're responsible for so many millions of dollars in this company. And, you know, if you end up dying or end up with some serious brain trauma, what have you, have to be in the hospital for a year, what have you. That caused us all kinds of problems. You heard them say this happened to one of the companies and it took them a year for the stock to recover. Like, hey, be responsible. You can't go out and get the unicycle that goes 100 miles an hour if you're the CEO of the company. Oh, no. Jeff Bezos and the rest of Mark Zuckerberg mentioned in the report too. And oh no, I'm a white man. Do what I want. Remember, I don't know if people saw it. They had probably have several by now, but they have a documentary on Enron. And it was the same thing. They showed how white executives at Enron, before they did their looting and plundering, they would go do these like extreme weekend outings and have to be stitched up and go to the hospital for all this craziness. And I'm rough, tough, I'm a white man. I can't just go out and sit at the lake calm. Oh, no. We got to go out and, what is it, go get the jet skis and do some parasailing, something where somebody might slip and break a neck and die. Like, put some danger and some extremeness in. Yes, throw some rattlesnakes in there. Yes. And they can't regulate this behavior, can't seem to get these unruly white executives under control. Bet if it was Mike Jordan, they would know how to control that. Let's see. It said the white man said, my life is mine. Tell me what to do. I'm a white man. It said they got to push the envelope. On this week when I've made such a point of the word safety, they said, pushing the envelope and doing things that are dangerous. The system of white supremacy demands danger. Anytime you have a small number of people dominating and terrorizing a large number of people, as is the case with this system, danger is required. Constant killing and terrorism is required. That is all unsafe. However, people generally are at least supposed to pretend and give lip service to safety, especially in the work environment. Always try to push things in the context of safety and promoting safety. In fact, be someone who becomes known for promoting safety in the workplace, discouraging unsafe activities. Get that reputation. Let's see. The next one, they talked about worker shortages. They talked about health care and not having workers to go in and take care of elderly white people. There were so many different components where just in the identification of racial classification of who we're talking about. But when they talk about the geriatrics, the Paula Deans, the Donald Sterlings, the Donald Trumps, this generation of folks dying out and who's going to take care of them on their way. They said women, people of color, and immigrants dominate this field. This is one where it's not white women. This is one they should make it clear. Non-white people. Non-white females specifically, but non-white people will be expected to come in and give sponge baths, change the bedpans, make sure that Paula Deen, Donald Sterling don't get bed sores. Very plantational. And then we don't want to pay you for all of this. We'll pay the nurses and doctors, but you niggers, you all aren't even citizens. They say they're immigrants. See, give you a few quarters to come in here and wipe my behind and give me a good sponge bath. And I'm going to terrorize and abuse you. They didn't even include that. We've had tons of cases where these old geriatrics, even old Timothy, don't drink the Kool-Aid wise, used to talk about that one. Say, you get these geriatric whites, they're 70 and 80 years old, can't pick up a spoon, can't remember their name, can't even make it to the bathroom on time, but they remember. What's a nigger? What do you do to a nigger? Nigger, get in here, change my bedpan. What's my name again? That's it, Roger.
Get in here and change my bedpan. What's my name again? Can't even remember my name, but I know that's a Negro. I know how to treat a Negro. Let's see. And I can't even imagine the graying they're talking about you having. That is one of the fasting, if not the fastest growing population in the U.S. Old white people. Oh, my. Who do they have drones for that? Have they been doing AI and such so they can have companions to come and wipe their bottom, bring them their slippers and the newspaper, get them toilet paper and Depends on time? Next, they had the segment talking about workers. Again, folks saying, hey, take this job and shove it. I love it. How am I going to invest my time and energy? Am I going to come here? They had black male said he had spent years, 20 years cooking in Kentucky. Said he loved to share food with people that he cares about, his friends and folks that he loves. Awesome. Sharing healthy food is great. I don't know about if he said plant-based eating, but, you know, we can hope. Brother said, I am not accustomed to having a free moment to smoke a cigarette. I said, pause right there. Whew. Sobriety would be best. That includes cigarettes. Jesus, we did the whole segment. They were just talking about, they were trying to market, they're going to stop marketing menthol cigarettes. I wonder if he smokes menthols. I would love to ask him. Give me $25 on that. Do you smoke menthols, brother, in Kentucky? Anyway, we talked about that Valerie Yerger. Back 2016, she was a guest on The Cows. Another aspect of white supremacy racism to get black people addicted to a whole lot of cigarette smoking. So you have what they call it comorbidities for all kinds of respiratory issues and cancers and such. But he said, I'm not accustomed to having time to smoke a cigarette. I'm not accustomed to having health insurance. I'm not accustomed to having time to sit down to eat a meal. I stopped taking notes at that point. I said, now, how have you been cooking for 20 years? You love to share food with the people that you care about, presumably you care about yourself, and you don't have time to sit down and eat a meal. That is the system of white supremacy racism. And talk about a teaspoon of black male privilege. Work so hard, I don't have time to smoke a cigarette, sit down and eat a meal, health insurance. I just work. Black male privilege. Anywho, I hope all the folks who have these types of jobs, as I said before, take this job and shove it. Save my resources. Unemployment benefits, extra Rona benefits, anything that you can get, squirrel it away. I love it. We heard, we were talking about that comparison contrast yesterday. Randall Sullivan, white journalist, he said he had 900 hours of sick leave saved. Brian S. Bentley, he didn't have all that. He didn't get a big sabbatical and everything. He could just take time to think, clear his mind, ponder life, make decisions about how should I invest my time and energy? Let me think. Don't want to have time for thinking Negroes. We heard multiple, and I had bunches of these, black people being harassed in the workplace. Talked about some of the folks said, hey, I don't want to go back to some of this work because you go work at Dunkin' Donuts and you get harassed and you have unruly customers. They come in and curse you out. I ordered 2%. This is half and half. What is wrong with you? I'll kill you. Remember the one they had from not too long ago? The guy, I think he worked at Dunkin' Donuts. It was a black guy. And a white man came in. It was the same type of thing. What are you doing here? I ordered 50 of the donut holes and you gave me 5 eclairs. I'll kill you. And he called him a nigger. Did you hear me? I ordered 50 donut holes. Where are my donut holes, nigger? You can't even count to 50, nigger. And the black guy got upset and he hit the white guy. And I think when he hit him, he fell down and killed him. They took him to jail. The black guy, of course, took him to jail. Making, what, $6 an hour, whatever it is, at Dunkin' Donuts to get called a nigger, get upset, and now you're in jail. Take this job and shove it. We heard the segment, black female, or black workers, period, States, and man, they're coming in here calling us Muslim this and nigger this and all the rest of it. Use your record button and document. Pile them up with documentation. That's one we talked about. Everybody should be prepared. Talk to your offspring. You can practice if you have friends, attempted care mate, whatever it is. Practice. Come in and call me a nigger. Come in and say something. Oh my God, are you a Muslim? Are you Osama bin Laden's cousin? And practice is my response. Oh, you can try them all. I'll practice today. I'll try not saying anything. Tomorrow, I'll give it a try. Tomorrow, I'll try. Would you mind repeating that, please? Next time, you can try. Let me pull out my pad and write that. There's lots of different ways. Pull out the phone and press record. Do you mind repeating that? I want to make sure I get this recorded. And you're in the question lane with that, too. Love it. But you can try all of those out. So nobody, if you are even a mild novice at attempted counter-racism, you already have a codified response. If somebody calls me a nigga, in fact, I'll say it this way, they better have something better than that. I haven't figured out the system of racism, white supremacy. I still got lots of learning to do, but I mean, racist woman, racist man, racist child. Rachel Nichols and the gang better have something better than just, hey, nigga, because I got that. Get something else. I already got my code on that, what to say, what not to say, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. No, nigga. Let's move on. Number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Let me see. I will do one. Oh, yeah. We'll do, because there were so many of these. Now, this is the Chicago Tribune. That's why I said, wow, I have no idea what it's going to be like by the time we get to the fall. But I would be very attentive to policy and procedure in your workplace, how people are talking, if anyone is reporting that they might have tested positive or anything like that. Whew, lots of these types of reports. So this is Chicago Tribune. For unvaccinated workers, some businesses adopt stricter rules. When North Chicago-based AbbVie employees returned to the office earlier this month, they faced two sets of rules based on whether they'd received COVID-19 vaccines. Vaccinated workers were not required to wear masks or social distance. Those without shots were told to undergo weekly on-site COVID-19 testing, wear masks, and social distance. Vaccination is the most effective way to keep people safe from COVID-19 and stop the spread of the virus, the pharmaceutical company wrote in an email to employees obtained by the Tribune. The health and safety of our workforce is our top priority, and we will continue our enhanced safety protocols at all our sites. AbbVie said in a statement that it is focused on ensuring the safety of its employees, but the company did not make anyone available to further discuss the policy. As companies across the Chicago area welcome workers back to offices, they're often labeling them as either vaccinated or unvaccinated with different treatment for each group. It can be a delicate issue given many people's strong feelings about vaccination that companies are handling differently. Many companies are asking employees if they're vaccinated. Some are taking workers' word for it, while others are asking for proof. Some workplaces are requiring all their employees be vaccinated unless they have medical or religious reasons not to be. Still, others are not mandating the shots, but requiring weekly COVID-19 tests and masking for those who don't have them. I will stop there, but like I said, there are lots of these reports. Different cities have already put in mandates for city employees, so it is quite a bit to be mindful about. I'm not vaccinated myself, and I know, you know, a number of the other folks, listeners and beyond, were in that position. It is a lot to consider for workers and even students. Like I said, for a number of colleges and universities, same thing. Almost August, autumn is right around the corner, might be vaccine or anything. Who knows, especially with the way they're talking about the so-called Delta variant. Anyway, no spectating, por favor. There are so many dynamics that are happening on the planet right now. If you decided to switch jobs, if you decided and were able to finagle things so that you could take some time off to kind of reconsider how you're investing your time and energy, the direction of your career, definitely share. If you have figured out some strategies around this virus, are they changing the policy? Are they talking like, wow, sound like they might want us to get vaccinated or might even require us to be vaccinated? Is that being discussed in your work environment? Any other problems, issues that are coming up? Let us know. 720-716-7300, decode 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate, and the email untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com. Let's see folks who dialed in. Comment here to share. First few folks with a hand up. Lawn should be open. Proceed.
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Good evening to the callers and the host, Gus, and the listeners. I drive rideshare in New York City, and I wanted to share a couple of notes on what I was listening to. And the first note that I have is the report on the hospitality industry having, I guess, a shortage of quality employees. I noticed that they used a phrase, lightning on a cloudy day. And that was extremely confusing because it was just very confusing metaphor that they used. The other thing that I wanted to report is on July 22nd, this past Thursday, home health aides protested mandatory vaccines for Presbyterian Hospital, and they were a part of an organization, a union called 1199. They were protesting New York Presbyterian Hospital requiring the home health aides and all employees have to have a vaccination. And those people were out protesting that that is mandatory for them to have a job. As was reported, the home health aides do not make a tremendous amount of money. So I found it quite interesting that they would put people out of a job who don't make very much money to begin with. And many of those people are people who have immigrated, especially in New York City. Many of those people are immigrants from Haiti or Jamaica or one of the Caribbean islands surrounding the United States of America. And many of them do not have education or work experience that would get them better jobs. So that's usually a last resort for many of those individuals. I found that quite interesting that that was a protest, and it was covered very briefly. And I have the article pulled up, but I don't want to read the article. What I took notes on was the Tyson factory, the black Muslim couple. I thought that they were harmed because they're black, but not necessarily because they're a Muslim, because many people don't eat pork. And that includes black people. So I just thought that was very interesting. I'm not sure that it would have been reported as a black Christian person was harassed at their job and called racial slurs. And lastly, I wanted to report on something that happened to me, which I actually did record. My vehicle does have a recording device, records video and audio. And I had a group that entered my vehicle, and they none of them had masks as they were approaching my vehicle. I asked them to, if they had face covers, would they put them on? I was attempting to be very polite and diplomatic. And as they entered the vehicle, I think that they were, I thought they were trying to put them on, but then one person said, do we have to put them on even if we're vaccinated? To which I responded, ma'am, I don't know who has been vaccinated and who has not been vaccinated. And I tried to be very polite about it, but I tended to want to be, to chuckle at that, because it just seemed kind of ridiculous that someone would determine that because they've been vaccinated, they do not have to follow regulations. They did all use a face cover. At least that's what I observed. I can't look behind myself to make sure they have it on at every single moment, but at least I believe that they put on face covers. But I just thought that that was a very interesting interaction. And that's all I have to report for now. Thank you all for listening, and have the best night that everyone can. Thank you. I'll mute my line.
Much obliged. Caller out in the New York area. The ride share, we were talking about that last week, saying, hey, a lot of folks with ride share were saying the same thing, like, man, I want to put myself in jeopardy. Exactly what he just said. We got these folks out here like, eh, I don't want to wear a mask. Do I have to? Eh. Like, you got to, yes, ma'am, please put your mask on. Yeah, I don't know who's vaccinated, ma'am. Please put your mask on. You have to go through that and then all the rest. And they're griping and got to be looking back. Are they keeping it on? Lots of folks looked at that one, too, and said, you know what? Take this job and shove it. Lots of folk in the rideshare industry did that as well. Now, lots of folks, even before all of that with the Rona, and you got people touching everything with their grubby hands and all the rest of it. I was, man, you got drunk race soldiers hopping in the car, and they want to tell racist jokes and call you names and do all the rest of it. Take this job and shove it. That's also one. Dead in streets, if you want to use metaphors. Advancement opportunities. You're going to help me pay the maintenance on my vehicle. Lots of folks doing reassessing about things. The 1199. Now, obviously, I'm on the opposite side of the country, so first time hearing about that. But now, particularly given what we heard, you're not going to pay me any money. Got to come in here and change your diapers, crusty old race soldier. But you're so fit to be tied, got to be required. You won't even wear a mask in your Uber vehicle. But I got to be masked up. Maybe it's because they care. Maybe they say it's because these here non-white people, as he said, non-white. He didn't say we got white women and people of color and immigrants. Non-white people, Caribbean and all the rest of it. Non-white people. And so they come here and, oh, man, we got these older folks. Let's make sure that they get vaccinated. We got the vulnerable population. Maybe that's it. If you really thought that way, then let's make sure these older folks get the best care possible by making sure we don't have a high turnover rate with staff. You don't have disgruntled staff who have to take 50 buses to get to work where they're well taken care of. Valued employees where they can do valuable work. Nah, we don't want to do that. We just want to gripe about making sure you get the Rona vaccine. Much obliged, good sir. Stay safe out there with the ride share, with your vehicle. I love it with the policy. Yes, Ms. Stan, polite, courteous, but absolutely, yes, we still have to wear a mask. Thank you kindly. Let's see. That I've never done rideshare, but that might be one because I think we've had other people who said they had excellent codes for their rideshare. We have to do all that before we even take off, because if you're going to be unruly and things, not even pulling over. Like, before we even get started with the ride, mask up. Not negotiable. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary to share, questions, or if you found some coding that works great, feel free.
Can I be heard?
One of our many, many callers, listeners in the California area. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Greetings to you and the people on the line. I was thinking when I heard the healthcare clip, how they are underpaid, and they are, I think they may be looked at in that industry like
the bottom feeders.
I think so. And the pay isn't great. And I've experienced the most racism working in people's homes, taking care of them, from what I mean, doing that healthcare work, and then I have my limits, and because we do the program and all that extra stuff, I'm always waiting on incidents, so it's always fun for me, and then I can just always share with you guys, we've done those. Workplace racism. So I had a, what are those things? I had a supervised meeting overlap scheduled for Friday, not today, last Friday. And, it wasn't scheduled. It was a surprise. So I had a surprise supervised session with a little boy that hasn't had supervision since June 6th. I'll say this. She may have had sessions scheduled and they got canceled. I don't know. I'll say that they may have been scheduled. She just hasn't been in the home. I've been waiting on materials for a while. It's very annoying for me. The reason why I know she was going to have come is because she sent me a message saying that the parent had cancer. I say, yeah, no. They told me. They told me. So she's like, oh, well. And then she sends it to scheduling. And now today at 9, she sends a message to overlap with her. I guess apparently her supervisor hasn't talked to her, just from me talking to my supervisor. I think she wants it to work itself out, the supervisor, or something, who knows. So I've talked to my supervisor today, because like I said, it was a scheduled meeting for today at 9, and when I get there at 11:30, the event is canceled. So now there's no meeting, there's no supervision, nothing. So I can do it. I just figured that it should be more done. It should be more. It more should be put into this. It's not right. Something is wrong, and then I'm going in every day on something that's wrong. And then if I think about it, I've been doing this particular case for 9 months. And he's not going to go to school now in person. I don't know how it's going to work because they're not offering online. I don't know what's going on. Well, I do know what's going on. He's not, his mom doesn't want to give him any more immunizations. And, so I don't know. Working on my resume, I'm trying to figure out who I am and what are my real skills. What do you really do? Because when I looked at my resume, it just didn't look like I had. Someone asked me what I do their resume, and I said, "Yeah, because I hate resumes." So I did it, and the resume was wonderful. It made my resume look like tissue paper. So I guess I want to make one like that for myself. So I'm working on it. My supervisor was stating that if I have to get off either one of the cases, because now I'm trying to usher the little girl off to school. That's the AM case. So if I do that, I'm not following her around. I can see what I can do, but I'm not following anybody around. And then with the little boy, if he's not going to school and there's no online school, it just makes it even trickier because the plan that's set up for me to do every day is malarkey. So, he's had this for, I'd say, 9 months. And the only change that's been made is maybe putting a goal on hold or maybe adding a couple of things that he may do that at school, but he's not interested in schoolwork with me. He already associates me with school. So if there's no laptop forcing him to do school, he's definitely not interested in me doing that as goals. So that's what I'm trying to get across, I guess, to whomever these supervisors are, that the way they have me teaching him doesn't work for him. I understand that they have these degrees and things, but I'm there. Not only am I there, I've been a whole life mom for 31 years, and I focus a lot on behavior, and his behavior is what I'm trying to get across, and the people that can change it aren't doing anything, and it's affecting the child. So that's what I was telling my supervisor today, that it's affecting him. And I know it's too bad on the parents, but actually it's too bad on him because he has to be with him. The parents go off. You can even put him in a home and say, well, 18, 16, something happens, they label him as whatever, just shove him off in a home. Like they may do with that older son, just shove them off at home, then you guys can live your life. You might even have a little girl or something that doesn't have any issues and just live your life with the child. That one suffers without proper structure and assistance, and it's bothering me. So I know it's work and it shouldn't bother me, but normally, I don't know. I guess I care about certain things, and I care about children and their development. And I just think if you don't and the killer is, well, guess what? The supervisor is requesting more hours. Go figure, right? So you're not available to come in session or do anything here in the case that you've had for 10 months. You can't do anything with that, but you need more hours. Oh, please, Louise. So anyway, please, Louise. Anyway, thank you for taking my call. I will mute my line and listen in.
Wow. Bay Area mom. Wow. First things first, we talk about that for a while. Maybe should have talked about it for more often. All of us, even if you have the best job ever, if we have any folks out there who are just lounging. Like, things are so good. You go up. You don't just put your shoes up on the desk. You kick your shoes off and put your feet up on the desk. Like, things are going that well. I didn't say your desk. I said the desk. Even if things are going that well, you should still have that resume buffed up, shining, just in case, because we are still on the plantation. We have Cal's listeners out there who have volunteered before to help people buff up that resume, make it a little more eye-catching. So I'm sure if some of those folks have a free moment, they would be happy to assist. That's part of what they do, to help you polish that resume up and just show off, brag about all the skills that you have. You've worked so hard for these lame folks on this job who are not investing in these children. I guess I'll pause for Dr. Welsing. When you play around with sex, the joke is on the offspring. Lots of different ways. All of that said, you've invested so much in these children, and I don't think it's strange at all, like what you were saying. When you, I think any job, even if you worked at like McDonald's or, you know, 7-Eleven, something goofy, but particularly when you work with children, I think anybody, you do that sort of work, if you have empathy and you care about these little folks and hope that they're doing well, they're in such a vulnerable position, that's something that you're going to, I think, take that home with you. You know, that's something that even once you're off the job, you'll think about that, especially if you think, man, they are not doing right by this child. They are not putting him in a program and getting him the resources that he needs so that he can thrive. And that's something that you're going to think about. And I think that at least that's been my kind of perspective for a while, that you've been talking about this lame company where you work at. They're so unconcerned. The white, like you've been talking about, the white supervisors and how they're not really vested. And you got a non-white supervisor. She was much more concerned and sympathetic to the children's needs, your needs. And it's both. You told us about the company where they're not vested in you or the children. So I can totally understand being frustrated and feel like you're in a situation where your best efforts is not even rewarded. Who wants to do that? That's why I said so many components of racism, white supremacy, they would encourage a certain laziness. They would kind of rob you of ambition. Why would I want to do my best if it's not going to be rewarded? And in fact, it's not even going to contribute to anything. My best efforts will just be a waste, you know, like it can really rob you of motivation. So, yeah, I would try to invest as much as possible in getting that resume crispy. Like, I'll get on my grind and see if I can find some of the folks who have assisted with that before for Cal's listeners, and try to send them email. Maybe I can send them your contact information as well. And yeah, to help out with that. And anyone else, like, whew, keep that resume buffed up, especially if you've been working hard and doing great work and all the rest of it. Like, oh yeah, make sure you can market yourself really, really well. Time to switch plantations may come for any of us. Much obliged, our Bay Area mom. And then the surprise supervision, what kind of nonsense is that? Like, why can't things be in a timely order on the job where I'm caught off guard and not expecting things, don't know what's happening? Like to keep that with Marvin Gaye again, 50-year anniversary. What's going on? Let's see. Number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see. Oh, we got Rob in California. Yes, sir.
Greetings, Jeff. Thanks for the program. Greetings to everyone else on the line and those listening. Tough day on the plantation. I left, 3.5 hours early today. That's been a ongoing trend. As the crew, as I like to call them, dominates the work hours. And so the clip that you ran about the food service workers that is very close to home, since I am a line cook, started as a dishwasher. And so on the line, it probably takes about five, maybe six people at most to run the establishment on the line when it's at its peak, when it's very busy. And it was 10 line cooks scheduled today. And so with all of the line cooks being high school kids that just graduated, they're going to be going back to school this coming fall. So in my opinion, the high school workers who are all classified as non-white Asian, and we're in the Asian establishment. Like I said, I'm the only African-American person there. Everyone else is classified as Asian. It seems as though the new manager, which is a younger female, maybe about 24, 25 maybe, she is giving preferential treatment to the high school children as they won't be able to work as many hours this upcoming fall. That is the conclusion that I came to, because for the life of me, I couldn't understand why there were so many line cooks being scheduled. And I've been there the longest, you know. So it's very frustrating. Kind of feel stuck. And I'm just trying to just maintain a level composure and not really let it affect me too much. But I'm pretty mad though, just on, you know, how Black people get treated under this system. Yeah, and thanks for taking the call. I'll mute my line.
Much obliged for calling in to share, Rob, in California. Many ugly days on the plantation this week. Hope you're doing the best for mental health and recuperating from all the stress of this. What we just heard right there, that's exactly why the report that we started off with, where they said, man, people in the hospitality industry, food service industry, take this job and shove it. Exactly what Rob just said. Like, I'm going to come in here and you have 10 cooks scheduled. Do we need 10 line cooks? Really? It's going to be another one where I'm not going to get the hours, the shift, the work that I'm supposed to get. That's what he said that exactly. Unpredictable scheduling. Said that in there. Unpredictable hours. Robin, California had told us about that and saying it seemed like, because he said some of the folks are about to go back to school and all that, and they got their little click and get their homies to come in. They can get hooked up, get the schedule that they want and all that, as opposed to, hey, no last hired, first fired here, because I got seniority. Negro. What I just said, the system of white supremacy can really rob your motivation. What's the point of me getting up, coming in, working hard every day, not taking days off, getting seniority on the job if it's not going to amount to anything? That's why we're trying to be super motivated, get this problem solved immediately. As he said specifically about being Black, hey, it's not just the food service industry. The news was scrolling by and they had a report in the Telegraph. Latir Sy, I hope I'm saying his name correctly. It's L-A-T-Y-R Sy, S-Y. Latir Sy, a Senegalese percussionist based in Japan for 20 years, accused Olympic organizers of racism after he was canceled. I don't think it should be written that way. After he was fired or removed from the program. You don't cancel a person generally. I don't even know what that would mean. You would just, you're not going to be whatever position we offered you. We're reneging. Now you're not offered. You're not invited. Get out of here. What the system of white supremacy can really rob your motivation. Got the Olympics going on and nobody's even in the stands to watch it. Let's see. Number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks, if you have a commentary to share, again, are they talking about changing up the policy around vaccines and such in your workplace? Are they talking about you might have to be vaccinated or lose your job? Is that being discussed in your work environment? Hybrid, if we have any folks, if you requested a hybrid work environment, if you got it or no, let us know how you asked for it, because I know that topic came up before. Anything with all of the chaos happening in the workplace right now, like, whew, shouldn't be spectating. Let's see. Other folks with comments here to share? We'll give folks a second to gather their thoughts. Like I said, it shouldn't be spectating this time around. I didn't even include all of the audio segments that I could have. It could have easily been probably this week a good 2, maybe 3 hours of just different news reports of all sorts. I probably wouldn't have played this segment just because the Rachel Nichols situation got a lot of attention and all the rest of it. But Mr. Bill Roden, this is Bill Roden Brothers on Sports. He offered some suggestions for the workplace within the segment. They're talking about Rachel Nichols that I regularly echo on the cows. So that's one of the reasons I'm playing it. Another reason I'm playing is also because, man, affirmative frickin' action. I am nicknaming Rachel Nichols. Her name is now going to be Rachel Affirmative Action Nichols. This segment, I mean, VGQ, they can say what they want, but I mean, a conversation about this shouldn't be black people always have to feel that they're the affirmative action hire, and it doesn't matter where you went to school and if you graduated from Harvard and how many accolades you have and all the rest of it. I was valedictorian of my class. No. You're just the affirmative action kid. Rachel Affirmative Action Nichols, that's the person who got this job. We got a quota. We got a box to fill. The undisputed heavyweight champions of affirmative action, Rachel Nichols, white women. And this is not controversial. This was in Time magazine. The great Pamela Evans Harris talked about this. Widespread, commonly known, it's just not commonly acknowledged. We'll start it off that way. This is Bill Roden Brothers on Sports discussing the whole fallout. Maria Taylor has subsequently resigned from ESPN, and I believe, unless I'm misinformed, Maria Taylor, black female, former co-worker with Rachel Nichols, white woman. Maria Taylor resigned because Rachel Nichols was not punished. I think that was said in this segment, that some of these victims of white supremacy, they said they didn't want to see Rachel Nichols' career or anyone's career get ruined in this matter. Again, victims guaranteed qualified. Rachel Nichols' career was not ruined or harmed by this incident at all. This is one of those things that I'm sure 6 months, a year from now, is not going to be talked about every day and people protesting. And I don't watch ESPN anymore because Rachel Nichols is there. I don't think so. They will just move on. It'll be an unfortunate incident. Maybe they'll do a 30 for 30 short about it somewhere down the road or whatever the else. But I mean, Rachel Nichols will probably be back at the finals next year, if not at the Super Bowl at the beginning of the year. Anywho, Bill Roden, Brothers on Sports, and then we will be back with the cows.
Some of the drama that's been going on. We want to, I guess, briefly talk about the whole ESPN situation.
Rose Spring goes black.
Yeah, well, I don't know. We just lost Bill, I think. But but the you know, the little controversy with Maria Taylor and Rachel Nichols, where they ended up removing Rachel Nichols from the NBA sideline reporter position that she had, to me was just a, you know, this could happen in any profession. You know, Rachel Nichols is respected. You know, a lot of people consider, have always considered her an ally, but it's just, it just comes down to, you know, like everybody's an ally until you come for their position, you know, or their kid's position, you know? So, and I don't, if I were white, who knows, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't, can I judge? I don't know. I don't even know if I can judge.
Well, obviously since, you know, I work for, you know,
yeah.
The Undefeated, which is run by and supported by ESPN and Disney. And Disney supports the Roden Fellows and blah, 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 right. blah, and all that kind of stuff. I will say this, you know, I love Maria Taylor.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I love Maria Taylor. And Maria Taylor, we've had her on our show, she's smart, she's bright, she has an athletic background. Her credentials are beyond reproach. I mean, she's just bright and rising, and she's part of a group of young Black women. You know, we had Taylor Rooks on the show. I mean, there's some sisters, man, who are coming up who are just dynamic.
Right.
You know, dynamic. And they're coming. They're coming for you. You know. And as always happens, you know, with you know, old heads. You know, you've been used to doing your job and all that, and before you know it, man, you know, blink of an eye, there's a whole new cadre of young people coming for your gig.
Right.
And it's not always pleasant, and it's often surprising, because, you know, you're doing the work, man, and you not think about how old you are or whatever, you're just doing the work. And if you're in a corporate situation, you know, we're all just part of a machinery.
Right.
You know, we're all part of a machinery. Some people are fortunate. There are a fortunate few who get to leave on their own terms.
Right.
You know, so, okay, you know, but most people don't, you know, and it's probably disconcerting. It's probably, you resent it, you know, but the shit happens to, you know, a whole bunch of folks, man, you know, a whole bunch of folks, you know, that, you know, so, but I think I'd rather look at the glass full and look at people like Maria, Taylor Rooks, Malika, who's, you know, took Rachel's place as a sideline reporter, you know, Malika's great. You know, she's great, as was Rachel.
Right.
I mean, you know, so, yeah, man, it's just one of those things that in our business, you know, and then the thing about in our business, we tend to care about it. Right. A lot of other people, they just want to see the show. You know, they want to see next person up. You know, they don't really care. You know, I mean, I think of Pam Oliver. You think of somebody who I'd love to have on the show. You know, Pam Oliver has been doing sideline reporting for decades, assistant, who's just great, and has been passed over, has been screwed, has been humiliated, but through it all, has basically come through that fire, you know, and with a toughness and a sense of grace and class and all that. You know, Maria, same thing, grace and class. You know, Taylor Rooks, grace and class. You know, you look at Malika, she didn't ask for this.
Right.
You know, but she's prepared. It's like I was looking at the pride of the Yankees when Wally Pipp asked for a day off. And they said, you know, he asked, you know, the day off. Lou Gehrig came in, you know. That was it.
He was ready to go.
You know, I'm trying to think. You guys think of anything like that? And I'm in sports or whatever, or I don't know, even in music or whatever. I guess music or the arts a little different, because it's not like Romare Bearden is waiting in the wings and then take Jacob Lawrence's place. You know,
right?
But can you guys think of anything where there was an athlete, a star, who injured or whatever, and then somebody came, who became like a legend?
Well, I guess that recent history, Tom Brady, right. You know, with Drew Bledsoe.
Right.
You know, I mean,
that was a prop.
I mean, look at it. Tom Brady was a what? What round was he? It was a low round, right?
Yeah, like,
you know, I mean, no one even knew of him coming out. Who's this guy?
Right.
You know, I didn't even know he, what was he, second string on Michigan's team or something? I was like, what?
Yeah.
So you never know. I mean, but, you know, I think in this context, you mentioned Pam Oliver, and it would be great to get her perspective, someone like her, of course, Jemele Hill, because, you know, being women in the business and what they've had to endure and just to see this. I mean, all I got to say is like, well, Rachel, she has to own it. You know, she said it, got to own it, you know. And it was recorded inadvertently, whatever, but you got to own it. That's the bottom line. She spoke her mind and just own it.
Yeah, and the only thing for me personally with Rachel Nichols, who I like and is great, but you know, it's like, why go there with it? Why do you imply that the other person is a diversity hire when we all know, like you said, that Maria Taylor is just great. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't care if she was white, black, green, or whatever. Maria Taylor is very, very talented. Probably the most talented, in my opinion, person doing that particular job. Like, you know, at least in her age, you know, definitely among the younger people, but maybe in general. So I just think, you know, the moral to the story, I agree with you, Bill, is that Maria Taylor is really, really good. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, maybe there's room for both of them. You know, maybe there's a male, you know, person out there that they need to kick out. It's not about race, you know. You know what I mean? Like, why not just say, oh, you know, she's great, you know, and I'm great. So
we could all be great.
Yeah. So. No, you know, and Bill, you had mentioned, like, in the music industry, we see this all the time because young talent is constantly emerging. And I've seen, I remember seeing an interview with Sammy Davis Jr. talking about this 40 years ago, seeing young talent just go right past the plateaus that he was able to achieve. But that's just the nature of the business. That's right. Just the nature of things. I see some of my students, former students, you know, getting signed to record deals, record companies that, you know, that may not have been available to me or my colleagues. And you know what? I'm happy for them.
Right.
I'm happy for them, man, because they get an opportunity. Your opportunity comes when it comes.
Right.
And, you know, when you see that happen to somebody else, you can't knock that. You know, so to Jamal's point, yeah, why did she have to go there? You know, especially being a woman in the business, you know, just like say, hey, great for her. It could have ended there. You know, like, why does that have to be? But that speaks to another issue that we're dealing with in these times, you know, with white America, black America. There's a portion of white America that sees, oh, well, if someone of a minority ethnicity is getting an opportunity, now all of a sudden that's a threat.
It comes in my sense.
No, that's not what it is, you know. Yeah. But, hey, like I said, she put it out there. She has to own it now. She's stuck with it. So whatever consequences come, you know, she, like I said, she's a great talent, but she's going to own that. And now, will that affect her status going forward? We'll see. You know?
And Bill, to your point about who, you know, we tend to care about this. Do other people really care? I think people do care just because it hit a nerve that all people have to, that a lot of people have to deal with this type of story in other industries or in other walks of life. Like, you know, I've been out, you know, to a couple of things recently, and it's like, to me, it seems like that's all anyone wants to talk about, particularly black people.
Right. You know, I as you were speaking, I just remember the late Don Imus. I remember, his shtick, he got on Gwen Ifill and mentioned me.
Mm.
He called Gwen Ifill, it really just a disparaging term. Then they said, Williams, he wrote, oh yeah, he's that minority hire at the New York Times, you know. And I guess I took it then as kind of like, you know, hey man, you know, whatever, I'm here, you know. But it's that kind of, you know, it's that kind of mentality. Like, oh, you went to an Ivy League school. Oh, if you're black at an Ivy League school. Oh, well, yeah, that's because you got in because, you know, a minority and all that.
Which is like so typical of like historically white America, like to put it on the black person, right? Like we're percentage wise, it's the hardest thing to do to get into like an Ivy League school. And then you say to that person, oh, you got it. It was easy for you because you're black. When the truth of the story is you could look at any white person who goes to an Ivy League school and say, oh, he just got in because he probably his father knew somebody or they had money. And you could just say that. You could blindly say that, ignorantly say that, and you would be right 50% of the time.
Well, remember this whole scandal, right? This whole scandal last year where these people were paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to get their kids into these schools.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, I watched that movie you recommended, Bill, by the way. The movie they made about that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. On Netflix?
Yeah, incredible, man.
It's incredible.
Wow, what? Incredible. The links, I mean, it's so deep. Everyone should see that. Everybody.
Yeah. What was the name of that again?
I'm trying to remember.
It's on Netflix. It might be whatever.
I forget the name of it too, but it's like
whatever, something.
Yeah. But it was like, it was eye-opening, a little demoralizing. Because, you know, when these things come to light, you know, it's like, damn, you know, the. You know, anyway, but yeah, so just to kind of put a bow on that, it's unfortunate, you know, I hate to see anybody's career get damaged like that, like Rachel, whatever, you know, but I think that I tell young students, man, you know, like there's some Roden Fellows in town today, you know, tell them, listen, man, you know, as soon as you get out of bed, you know, and leave your Howard apartment building, you're on stage, you know, you're on stage. And probably when you're on the phone, when you're on your cell phone, all these cell phone towers, we're probably in the United States, probably one of the most eavesdropped upon populations in the world. We're probably the most spied upon, you know, so you just take that under advisement, you know, whatever you say, be intentional about it. And if, you know, my whole thing is that if you were talking about to somebody, whatever, over the phone, whatever, would I want to see this in headline? Mm-hmm. What I'm about to say. Would I want to see this in headline? Would I want to see, you know, and if you say, nah, then don't say it. Right. You know, wait till we see each other in person, you know, over lunch. And then if they spying on that, fuck, you lost anyway. But
right.
You got to pat them down and make sure they don't have a wire. You
know? Yeah.
Right. Oh, by the way, the movie we're talking about on Netflix is Operation Varsity Blues.
Reading more important than watching television. Operation Varsity Blues, I've not watched it, but that cheating scandal was a big deal not that long ago. Might be worth checking out. Incidentally, before I get to my notes on that Bill Roden segment, we mentioned Dunkin' Donuts earlier, and I said that they just recently... A race soldier went into Dunkin' Donuts, called a black worker a nigger, and the black guy killed him. That was in May of this year. Let's see. A 77-year-old man has died after a heated exchange between him and a black employee at a Dunkin' Donuts in Tampa, Florida. Scrolling down. The black male was initially charged with battery on May 5, which later got elevated to aggravated manslaughter after the customer died 3 days later of the result of his head bouncing on the hard Dunkin' Donuts concrete floor. Police said the victim did not like the lack of service he was receiving and decided to get out of the drive-thru and confront the employee. That's just what they said in the segment. The elderly man and the black male had an argument. The elderly man used a racial slur, offended Pujols, dared the rude customer to say the word one more time, which he did. I'm not laughing because a life was lost, but I mean, if you are elderly, 77 years old, right? You're not a spring chicken. You are that upset. You go in and look here, nigger. Blah, blah, blah. The person, call me a nigger again. And you lean over, got your cane and everything. Nigger. I mean, wow. I don't want to hear nothing else about white people being scared of black people. That is folly of the highest order. Even then, I would think it would be, oh my goodness, he might kill and rape me. This is the black male, right? You know, I can't just be in here talking any old type of way to a black male. I'm a fragile old guy. Get over there, Coon, and get my donut holes. Back to Mr. Bill Roden. This was just from May of this year. I thought this was like recent news. May 13, 2021. So the segment, Bill Roden and Jamal Murphy, brothers on sports, just a few days ago, where they're talking all this affirmative action. Again, the champions, Rachel Nichols, white women. I thought it was important. Mr. Roden, author of $40 Million Slave, he said, hey, the Roden Fellows Program, Disney supports that. The Undefeated, ESPN supports that. And I believe ESPN is a subsidiary of Disney. So it's like Disney is supporting all of this. So he's limited in what he could say. That happens frequently in a workplace situation. If anything, I think it's excellent for if you are employed by someone, to know what all their subsidiaries are, and if that means that you might be contractually prohibited from speaking to certain subject matters, that's important to know. Now, in terms of racism, white supremacy, there are lots of different ways where white people stop us from revealing truth and speaking honestly to the best of our ability. Lots of different ways. Sometimes they get you in trouble. They'll threaten you. That's a part of your contract. Next, victims guaranteed qualified about everything, you know. Don't encourage the use of the word minority. I said Rachel Nichols. In my opinion, this event, this recording and all that, has not, will not damage her career. Again, Maria Taylor has resigned from ESPN. It wasn't announced that Rachel Nichols resigned. It wasn't announced that Rachel Nichols was fired. It was announced that Maria Taylor, the black female, resigned from ESPN. And the reason given was because Rachel Nichols not going to be disciplined by the network. Didn't we say last week, I said Rachel Nichols affirmative action. Now, a caller in Georgia, she said Rachel Nichols nepotism. Take your pick. Rachel Nichols, I think she said she's related to Diane Sawyer, allegedly, and perhaps that helped that resume get pushed to the top of the stack at ESPN. Maybe it isn't that Rachel Nichols worked really hard, great resume, paid her dues, as they say. Maybe that's not the case. Cronyism, that's another one that they throw in. Lots of different words that we could call it. So, yeah, in my opinion, we might have to wait a year or 5 years to see, you know, is she at the finals next year? Maybe 6 months. Is she at the Super Bowl in 2022? We'll have to see. But generally, white people don't get fired. In this case, she didn't even get transferred. Anywho, again, words are important. Now, Mr. Roden, he said, he tells his Roden fellows and students, you're on stage, and I would just state it differently. System of racism, white supremacy, you want to be in a habit of speaking as though everyone potentially in the known universe may have access to what you are saying. If it's written, if it's recorded, whatever, both maybe, that's the way that you want to be consistently thinking and behaving, because you never know, particularly these days when you are being recorded. That's the way that I would state it, so that never happened, even in person, because I have no idea. This person, they got a cell phone. They don't need a wire. They got a cell phone. Might be recording. You don't know. It's other people around. They got cell phones. You don't know. Alexa, you don't know. Be in a habit. Don't say anything repeating to another person that you are not comfortable with. Everybody. Particularly in a workplace setting, like, oh, nah, anything that's said to another non-white person or white person that is in a work setting, this is a coworker. Oh, yeah, you're talking as though you're talking to everyone who has ever, is now, and will ever be employed for this organization. That's the way that you want to think, so that there is never a whoops, shouldn't have said that. Nah, that doesn't happen. I talk all the time as though This is being transcribed right now. Get you out of the habit of being reckless with your language. Also can break up some of that gossiping and all that other stuff. If you're talking as though this is being, well, let me not get too aggressive about old Paul. He might hear this. I just want to say a few things about, hey, Paul, how you doing? Good to see you. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And how many times I've said, being the system of white supremacy where this type of things happen, you got recorded evidence of what seems like a white person practicing racism, maybe multiple white people practicing racism, being confused. We thought she was an ally. I never, ever, ever thought Rachel Nichols, affirmative action, double A, the nickname Rachel double A Nichols, I never thought she was an ally. What does a white person have to do to be an ally, so-called, while the system of white supremacy still exists? Rhetorical, you can think on that one. But Mr. Roden, he said it's demoralizing. I don't know if it's demoralizing because realizing that, oh, maybe we don't have any white allies. Maybe that's demoralizing, and it seems for some non-white people victims of white supremacy, it is. Either it's true or it's not, and it's demoralizing when you do go out and you work hard and you pay your dues and you get an assignment and it just gets chalked up to, we had to hire 15 niggers this month and here's nigger number 15. Congratulations on you. They get every ill-mannered, illiterate, no-count, incompetent coon and got to put them in here and take my job. Now, this isn't a moment where I can celebrate. I'm at the NBA Finals. Like, people around the world, millions of people will get to see me and all the red. I'm the undeserved coon who took a qualified white woman's spot. Doesn't get any better than tacky. Again, I have not seen Operation Varsity. Hey, for all we know, Rachel Nichols could be Operation Varsity Blues. How do we know? That is widespread. Individuals classified as white being able to lie about their classifications. My goodness. Woo, you have no idea. What do they call it? The tip of the iceberg. Number again, 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, you have commentary to share, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you, Gus, for taking my call. Greetings, everybody in the line. I wanted to, give some suggestions for people who may work in a similar environment that I do about obtaining a hybrid type work situation. We currently have obtained that in my plantation. The process that we used was getting the entire office to want to go on a hybrid type work environment. So we are currently and it's scattered out through all the employees, each working only 2 days out of the week in the office, and the rest of the days will be at our homes. So if you can persuade all the employees to see this as their something that's beneficial for them, then I guess you can all go to management and together plea for a hybrid type situation. And I did have a question for one of the callers that called earlier, who was doing rideshare. I wanted to ask, what type of video recording equipment did he use for his vehicle? I guess I'm mute my line now. Thank you, Gus.
Much obliged, sir. So we got a question, and then that is spectacular because I asked about that, and I think we had a caller about a week ago, maybe two, where she wanted to make that request. I had not thought of that, to make this kind of a group request, that this would be in our collective best interest to have a hybrid work situation so we're not all clustered together and all of that. That is spectacular, and the company went for it. Fine. And they got, I mean, wow, 2 days in, 3 days out. Bravo, bravo. See, that's what I said. Like, I don't like using that R word, but this is revolutionary. Like, who would have thought of this? Like, beginning of 2019, like, oh yeah, everybody's going to be working from home 3 days a week, no less. Like, coming into the office for 2 days. And that this might be the way the world looks moving forward. Heck, some people don't come in at all. I told you, we moved to Wyoming, not coming back. Working home 5 days a week. Working from Wyoming 5 days a week. Our victim doing ride share, I believe, in the New York area. What kind of camera recording equipment do you use, sir?
Hello, may I be heard again?
Yes, sir.
Camera that I have, it's a dual camera. It's a Nexar, spelled November, Echo, X-Ray, Alpha, Romeo, Nexar. It is a dual camera. It is one camera that is facing the road, which I got for free from from my insurance company. And the second part of it is an internal camera, which I purchased for, I believe it was around $75. I hope that answers your question.
Maddie Hurt?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, caller from New York. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Gus.
Indeed. Indeed. Let's see. Man, crazy. The number again is 720-716-7300. The code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If we have any other folks, if you were able to get that request in, get some hybrid days or other resources, amenities that would make your work environment healthier, maybe even more efficient for you and others, share. Like I said, this is a great time. Like, it might be, get some black self-respect if it's asking for a raise, asking for a hybrid work situation, asking for additional vacation time, whatever, all of the above maybe. But this is a great time. Black self-respect, and just figure out the best way, what to say, and then the collective approach. Like, you could even break them up individually. Like, hey, the hybrid group request, maybe we can make that a group thing, get it for everybody. Whoopee, get some white people to be the spokespersons for us collectively. Then I don't even have to, you know, say anything directly and could still benefit. Get out and ask. I think it's generally kind of tacky and overused, but man, it might apply. Lots of, at minimum, lots of things seem like they can be changed, or at least there's room for negotiation on lots of things right now. And maybe take some time if you have colleagues that you work with and you all have a good rapport, especially if they're victims of racism. Talk out some strategies. What type of things, what type of benefits would be most helpful? What do you think you can achieve? And then what's the best procedure for trying to secure the victory? Like, strike while the iron is hot, as they say. Number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564 *943#. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Not for spectators. Again, for folks, if you have thoughts, suggestions, or comments, even observations on how your work environment continues to adjust, might even be some, I don't know, reconsidering if it was no masks needed for a while, and now we'll put the mask back on, that type of thing. Like, phew, man, lots to try to make get our heads around. Before we get to some of the other folks, unless folks are just spectating, man, I cannot emphasize enough safety. I had incidents that were not workplace racism related per se, but wow, they would be applicable for the workplace like tenfold. Work, as I said before, the system of white supremacy is inherently unsafe in a variety of ways. DDT, the chemicals that Flint, Michigan, you can't even drink a cup of water. Everything about this promotes unsafety, particularly for non-white people, especially black people, so-called. All of that said, you are at least supposed to give what they call lip service, like pretend that we are about safety, especially in work environments. That can be used to your benefit, and particularly, same thing with our caller. Now, he said, hey, I guess he could have went in and said, hey, I individually want a hybrid work situation. I want to work from home 3 days and then I'll come in the office 2 days. Some people have done that, and even successfully, as opposed to doing it that way. Let's go the collective route in how we try to get all of this, addressed. Let me pause for a second and get some water. I should have done that a long time ago. I'll take a quick 30 seconds, come back after I get my water. Collective. The words were safety and collective. I've done that a lot this week. We're putting two words together. Whew. Collective safety. Quick water break and we'll be right back. Context of white supremacy.
Our people are very serious about not being very serious. Meanwhile, white people are very serious about playing hardball against us. And this hardball is called genocide.
Context of white supremacy, Dr. Kamau Cambon, many times a guest on the program. Now, collective. Our previous caller said, hey, collectively, we go and ask for the hybrid work situation. Got it pretty quick. Bravo. Same thing. You can sometimes, or I won't even say sometimes, frequently you will be successful if you address things as an individual safety concern, individual safety violation or hazard. Whew. If something becomes a collective safety issue, this is potentially unsafe for the entire group. Whew. Lightning, at least in the workplace, we're all supposed to pretend that we are about group safety. So, just based on how things worked for me under extraordinarily difficult circumstances, it would be, a hot knife through butter. Anything in the workplace, I wouldn't even address it as racism. If it's any sort of racist mistreatment and abuse, I would address it as a safety concern. Let's take what we heard today. Person comes in. You niggers this, and I agree totally. The caller who said that the couple that was being mistreated at the plant, they were Muslims. It wasn't because their religious beliefs. It's because they're black. I totally agree. But let's take that. Oh, my gosh. Is this Osama bin Laden's cousin? Oh, my goodness. We got these nigger Muslims and all the rest of it. I would address that as a safety concern and or even in additionally a safety violation. This sort of conduct in a worse place, it's so unprofessional and outrageous and intolerable because, hey, we don't know who's going to hear this and how they're going to respond. What did Mr. Roden say? Do we want everyone? What if this is being recorded right now and someone hears this? All kinds of things could happen. This is promoting an unsafe work environment, and I would even say collectively unsafe, and I would tie it right back to, we've had all those shootings this year. This is the exact sort of thing that can be at the root of a toxic work environment where things become dangerous, violent, and unsafe. And wait for the person to say, oh, you shut up, Gus, you all that hyperbole. Be quiet. You don't know what you're talking about. Really? Really? Do we think gossiping and name-calling co-workers, do we think that promotes a safe work environment? I get to be in the question lane, and I would have my pen and pad ready. What do you say? The fella in the Dunkin' Donuts, I dare you to call me a nigger again. I dare you to say you think name-calling and gossiping creates a safer work environment. Lick the tip of my pen. I would get fancy with it. Lick the tip of my ballpoint pen, pull out my yellow legal pad, and dare someone to say, oh, yeah, I think it promotes a safer work environment. Woo! Say that again, Bob. Let me write that down. And then the next question, how? And we'll wait till you can explain that in a logical manner, but that's not going to be required. Most of the time in a work environment, you might bet $1,000 on that one. In a work environment, people generally are supposed to pretend we are about safety. Let's make sure everyone is safe. Everything would be addressed. I mean, anything. If racism is happening, that is a safety violation. I would not use racism at all. Everything, I would try to see how can this be addressed as a safety concern. If we're not following policy and procedure, often those procedures are there for the safety of everyone who works here. Safety, as I said, get a reputation for someone who talks about and promotes safety, thinks about safety. Whew. I just didn't know that is one of the most important concepts, and that for sure is a concept, because we are in a super unsafe environment. The plantation, castrating folks and all the rest, nothing safe about the plantation. But the concept of safety, very important, especially in the workplace. 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. The mask policy. People get in the vehicle and they don't want to wear a mask. Safety. Everything. It would just be safety, 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 safety. Policy and procedure is about safety, unless I've been misinformed. Safety. I would make everybody walk me back that, oh no, what you're talking about is crazy. Or, we don't think safety is important. That would be another one. Dare you to say that one in a work environment. I don't care about safety. Why are we wasting all this time talking about safety? What? Who said that? Let me get this recorded. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in with us, comments, questions to share, proceed.
May I be heard?
Caller in Florida, yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners, and callers. That is a great point about safety, and I've been trying to think of some ways of how to use words to address the system of white supremacy on the job. But I wanted to start out with there were some conversations about there were some shootings in the city earlier on this week. So anytime when the news media likes to associate violence and shootings to black people, I notice the coworkers, the white coworkers, like to try to bring that up, and they'll talk about that. And it definitely is tacky and racist. But, you know, of course, when white people do something, they don't have the same, as they say, the same energy, or they don't put forth the same effort to bring that up. And I definitely use that as practice when those kinds of occurrences happen, to just don't really respond, and it'll eventually pass. But sometimes, like the victim that I usually speak to, she says that she just cut them right off. Like, no, I'm not going to talk about this. I got work. I have work to do. What does this have to do with my job or whatever? You know, ask a question. And usually it'll be like her supervisor or coworker that'll come mentioning that. And she says she's not going to talk about other black people. My next one is, there was the leader of the people, the leader that started the workplace click. She asked me if I had the keys to the vehicle that we use at the office. So the other white woman, the older white woman, says, oh, just tell her no. Just tell her no. She wasn't very polite, you know, I guess so-called joking with each other or whatever. I just gave her the keys, and I said, no, why would I do that if I'm most likely going to get in trouble? How's that going to help me? So I just asked that question, and once again, I didn't get an answer, so they just went toward the elevator and went downstairs. And she came back with the key, and she was going to toss it at me, right? So I said, no, don't do that. Don't throw or toss me anything. Come hand it to me. Can you come hand it to me? So she comes around the area and hands it to me. My next observation is, this is kind of similar, where a white supervisor, I was going around doing the recycling. So me and another person does it in a certain pattern, it seems like. And she had a box of paper that she was looking through. She pulled it up from under her desk, or the desk she uses, and she threw it. She tossed it on the ground, right? So I was in a hurry, so I said I had to come back and address that with her. So I had to go do some things. So I said when I got back in the courthouse, I was going to go and address that. So when I came back, I said, can I mention something to you really quick? I said, that exchange that we just had, like, you know, can we not have that again? You know, when you just toss that on the ground at me like that. Oh, well, you know, I do that with everyone. I said, well, you shouldn't do that to no one. That's going to cause mistreatment, right? I said, yeah, I can see how that could be. But, you know, being a white person and the entitlement and everything, she says she's doing that. She does that to everyone, which didn't really make much sense. But I said, when you did that, I said, I felt like a slave. I don't know if that might have been the right language, but that's what I said. So said, oh, I didn't mean to offend you or whatever like that. And I said, can you not ever do that again? So she said, yeah, I'll stop doing it. So I went and I reported that. I confronted her with the supervisor that's over me. And I mentioned the person's name, and the coworkers, some of them started saying, yeah, she came over and she tossed something at me as well, some envelopes. And I thought, I didn't like that. Does this happen to anyone else or something? And then another person says she snatches things from her. But I'm thinking, man, what in the world, if she did that to you all, how in the world was she able to get away with it this long? And I thought of that to myself. And I just said, isn't it obvious because she's a white person and she's allowed to put forth that kind of rudeness and that kind of behavior and not being professional? So I was the one, it seemed like, to be the first person to point it out to her. A victim of racism, she was on the phone and her daughter works to the other building, and she was sounding like her daughter was upset over the phone, and she was like, you got to calm down and you have to wear to work what they say. Don't give them a reason to target you because it looks like they're targeting you. And, you know, you have a black manager. You need to listen to me. You're a black employee of a black manager. They're going to do petty things to get you into trouble. You know, such and such. She said the person's name. Blank is a black manager. They're going to bother her as much as, you know, that's the way she was verbalizing it. White people walking by, the white bailiffs, like, oh my God, what is she talking about? And they were just really quiet. So she was getting really upset, and she was saying, they're going to make me lose my job about what they're doing to my child. So I need you to make sure that you're dressing appropriately in case they want to call you to court, because you can get called to a court hearing to be a court clerk at any time. So it's not always Friday the way you can do dress down. So just go by what they say or whatever. So that's basically what she was saying. I want to also mention that this person, and I just, once again, I just disagree with how she is sharing her personal information with, it seemed like for the most part, it's with the white coworkers. And I don't think, and just like you mentioned, Gus, it's incorrect to do that with any of the employees. But she seems to keep doing that with a lot of the CLIC members and the staff members or whatever, because there was an incident that happened with her today where she had an emergency about having to do something with her child, offspring. And I don't think that this is legal where they can actually look up the cases online or whatever on the website that we utilize. And she was saying that an arrest happened and it was just officers coming in to talk to her. It was just a lot of personal things. And it ended up to where I overheard another member of the clique on the other side of the office. She said, you know, she calls another female that's in the clique also. She says, hey, I have first appearance tomorrow. I can look at the video, right? So how evil and racist is that? You want to try and probe into the black female's information? That's what that sounded like to me. So that's how I wrote that one down. And I have one more, if I could. There was a post that this person, the same person, she, hold on, she put up, it says, if a hawk kills a single crow, is it considered murder? So I just think, like, that's just more their refined racism, a murder of crows. And crows have black feathers, and I think it's just some racist entendre punchline in that. And actually, I had another one. There was another member that got hired because of this one person. She was talking with another employee about a black supervisor. Now, this is just not ignorance. She knew what she was doing. So she said that on Tuesday morning, just a couple of days ago, she was questioned about her production, her level of productivity about doing the portal. It's something they call a portal. So why weren't she was sent an email by the black supervisor first asking, why didn't you do as much of the portal that you could have done the previous day? So she said in her response, she didn't actually go into the detail of what she responded with. She just said she told her off, so-called. But then when the lady that I title as the warden, a white woman, she said she modified, right? She said she copied and pasted what was sent in her response to the black person and modified it to send to the white woman. She didn't send that same message to the white woman. Now, she said she modified it. But see, it's interesting because the black female supervisor can send her version. But anyway, she says she didn't add as much attitude to when she sent it to the warden because it was the warden, quote unquote, the white person. It wasn't like when I was talking to the supervisor, the black lady. And then the other white woman said, oh, yeah, yeah, that's a good point. You know, I got to remember that myself. So that was a quick one I wanted to remember. I wanted to share that because I think that was definitely white supremacy being practiced, unjust networking as well. And I agree, white people aren't ignorant about white supremacy. And that's all I have to share. Thanks for allowing me to speak.
Much obliged, caller in Florida. I'm just trying to make sure I heard that right. So the email or communique that went to the warden wasn't as spicy as the messaging that went to the black supervisor. Is that my understanding?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. She said she copied them and pasted and also like made some, I guess you could say, refinements, like some improvements and added some certain words to how she responded to the white female warden, white woman warden, because they were both, I guess, critiquing her working ability, I guess, the last couple of days, but she responded differently or in a more pleasant way to the white warden than she did her black supervisor. She was more just showing more contempt for the black person, of course, and her wording from what she was saying.
Fascinating. Now, at least my assessment of that, maybe I'm, you know, misinterpreted. I didn't get to read, you know, the documents and all that, but it doesn't sound like you can be ignorant about racism, white supremacy, if you have one version of this document that goes out to someone classified as white, then the Negro, they get a totally different version. The version that goes out to the white person, kindness, all these great things to say, sweetness and all that. The Negro letter, Let's get to the point. And they said that the letter that went to the white person wasn't as spicy. Delectable Negro, again, Sunshine State, no less, like seasoning the Negro. Maybe that's part of the seasoning. You have to get a few lashes in there and get some nasty attacks and jabs in the letter. That's part of the seasoning of the Negro to condition them how they're supposed to behave. Very interesting. Let's see. The Negro shootings. I think we've had a few folks who said that they have a white person. Often it'll be a white female who, for whatever reason, anytime it's a reported Negro shooting. Did you see Darnell? He killed an elderly white man in the Dunkin' Donuts. They won't bring that up because the white man did call him a nigger twice. But they'll bring up something like that. Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. What is the world coming to? Oh. One of our listeners, investors, she said that what she does, she'll make a habit of checking the news so that she can say, did you also see in the news? This week is 10 years to Anders Breivik when he killed 77 people in Norway. She said every time. That shut all of that down. Like, let's just get back to work. We don't talk about any more shooting. Because she said it was always, did you see Dylan Roof killed eight people? Or did you see Nathan Allen killed all those folks? All right. Let's not talk about shooting. Let's just get back to it, which is what we're supposed to be talking about anyway. Not shootings. Let's see. Man, they got the folks in the click now. I've said this repeatedly. You know, this is the same thing. When the system of white supremacy is not safety, it's not about promoting kindness and let's work together and help each other out. That's not where we're about gossiping and tear people down. Did you see what she had on? And, oh, Lord, that was tacky. Hurt my eyes. That type of thing. These folks at the courthouse, you got the click and all the unjust networking and all that. But I mean, just the regular, like, daily conduct, what we hear. The fella, the bailiff comes down. Oh, I'm fixing to shank you. Look at you. They got the other fella. He comes in. He takes the remote controls out of the battery, locks it on Fox News just so I can aggravate folks. Got the other fella. He comes in. Hey, Margaret, shut up and get back to work. That's how you talk to him. You can do the same thing. Hey, Nelly, go ahead. Tell her, shut up, get back to work. Who are these people? You all are all supposed to be public servants, like the best of the Sunshine State. They come here to be belligerent. Remember the fellow who came in? Oh, my God. He hopped over the railing. It's the queen of evil. Ooh. Who are these people at the court and sitting the water on the floor? I mean, it's just every day like this. We're at the courthouse. Public servants. Why aren't we about helping people, being much less, even if it's okay, fine. We are going to be about gangsters. All the employees and people come up here. I wish you would say something rude, discourteous to us. Like, we're total gangsters. But at least the people that you work with, I'm going to be courteous and nice to them. I'm not saying that you got to bring them a Starbucks gift card every day. I'm not saying you got to bring them cookies and all the rest. Just at least I'm going to be courteous. I'm not going to try and take the remote controls out of the battery out of the remote control to annoy you. I'm going to shank you. I mean, it's every week just insult, 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 insult. Person, remember he said the one, and I think he's even the victims, said she came around. Where is Jackie at? I want to come get on her nerves. This is not unique to the Florida courthouse. He just gives a lot of colorful examples. But I mean, this is a lot of work environments. People are not there to be courteous and helpful. It's gossiping, backbiting. That's another reason why you want to be encouraged and not do a lot of unnecessary sharing and the like. Just be professional, courteous about safety in the workplace. Because it's lots of this is what you'll be wading through. Let's see. And now you get all of that. You get the white woman who comes in, you coming around. I'm doing my job. We work, we organize, we get out the recycling. They are all this about climate change, right? The floods in Europe. We had the heat wave here. Climate change. Let's recycle, reduce, reuse. Got to be tacky about that. Oh, he's getting the recycle. Here, let's throw this on the floor. Pick that up, Negro. And then you go to say something. Oh, I do that to everybody. I don't just, you know, that's not just treating you like a Negro. You know, I do that to everybody. And then you go around and ask. And it's the same. She snatches things out of my hand every day. She throws things on the ground. What sort of conduct is that? Why are you snatching things from your colleagues at the courthouse? Entitlement, terrorism, really. Like, that's the only way I know how to behave. Let's see. Throwing items all in the same Rubik. Now, again, professionalism, safety. We're not going around. I mean, they got the judge there. You got the bailiff. I'm sure you might have to deliver documents or whatever to the judge from time to time, the warden, other individuals that work there. I don't think people go in when they see the judge. Oh, hey, judge, I brought in a donut. Catch. Whew. I don't think they go when they see the bailiff and they got documents or whatever to share. Oh, here you go, bailiff. Pew. Why is it you see the nigra and now all of a sudden, oh, it's time to, but let me show you my Patrick Mahomes arm. Pew. And flicking keys, like stab somebody's eye out, jab me in the face. Like, come on, come on. Walk this over and put it in my, did I throw, that's the same thing. The few, anything that's a major deviation from typical office protocol, like what's going on? He had the black female in the cafeteria. She's trying to eat a lunch. The woman came in. Why don't you just eat with your hands? She asked, do you eat with your hands? Cleared the whole room out. Now nobody wants to talk. Why are you throwing keys at me? Why are you assuming I don't need silverware? Let's see. We keep going, and I love it. The black self-respect to address the incorrectness. Do not throw those keys at me. Bring them and place them in my hand. Thank you. Do not ever throw paper or whatever on the ground as we're coming by. Black self-respect. And you can even add both of those. Now, imagine if you were going around behaving in that manner. I'm throwing documents on the floor. You know, I'm throwing things at the judge and the bailiff and the warden. I don't think you'd be on the front page of the newsletter if you were doing that. I could be totally wrong, but let's see. And I suspect a lot of these folks are not 20. I'm not saying, you know, that is an excuse. I'm just saying these are going to be the belligerent old people that will need non-white people to care for them as they age. Behaving like this, snatching things out of people's hands, throwing things on the floor and all the rest of it. Let's see. Oh my gosh. The stop sharing thing. Now, I didn't think this way before, you know, confusion, not understanding what white supremacy racism is. So I didn't really grasp, like, you want to have a little bit more discretion, and individuals classified as white do a lot of ear hustling, especially once it sounds like you're talking about racism. So when this victim, she's talking to her family member and like, oh my gosh, and trying to, it sounds like, give him constructive advice, you know, be cautious. And you've got a black supervisor. They especially got it out for you. Believe you me, absolutely. But man, that's one, you know, we talk about maybe if you can take 5 minutes to walk outside, tell them you got to move your car, or I'd say go to the bathroom, but they probably don't have like an individual thing. So it might be, you know, no privacy there either. But if you can't walk outside or walk across the street or something to get away from prying ears, like, man, because I mean, it sounds like she's doing the correct thing. Who doesn't want to look out for a attempted family member? But I mean, man, nosiness, nosy racists in the workplace, you do not want them knowing all of your they might have cousins who work with your family member where they can really dig in. I'm like, oh, that's her. Unjust networking, like, across the city. And then you see, he says it continues where they do all their ear hustling and they do the unjust networking. Oh, I got first shift in the morning. I think I can go get the video. Ooh, I'm going. That's why I wrote this down. Like, what sort of ethics do we have for the people who work at the courthouse? Like, decorum? Professionalism? Like, why is this? Gossip. That's why I said everything for me would come back safety. Now, is this safe? This sort of gossiping and backbiting? Are you doing this to help somebody? Or is this just going to be something you can gossip about another employee? And a tragedy, it sounds like. Something that's not, ooh, let me get my popcorn and check the, I mean, total disgrace. The hawk kills a single crow. Does anyone care? Just with the whole Jim Crow, this is Florida, the whole Jim Crow and all of that has so much, how will I say, cultural significance in the context of white supremacy, that I would suspect you are correct, that probably does have some sort of racist significance in terms of why she was saying something veiled like that, especially these people with the type of behavior that they have. And again, what are we even talking about? killing another animal. And it sounds like I didn't get to see the image. I'm just processing what I heard. So who's upset about a hawk kills a crow? Does anybody get upset, jump up and down? Okay, so are you suggesting that we shouldn't be upset about death happening, an unjust killing happening, an unjust killing of, I don't know, Negroes perhaps, Jim Crowed? I don't know. I could be totally off. She'd be best to explain, but given their conduct and history of social media posts and such, definitely questionable. And like I said, anything for me, once the crow has been invoked, let's see, good name. I think I started with the one where we end off. Man, I can only say that the folks at the courthouse, like, just in terms of conduct, like, it's every week. This is why these are not the folks that you want to eat anything that they bring in. Like, just their daily conduct. Like, you don't even have the decency to pass me a pair of keys, and I'm going to eat your muffins. You don't even have the decency to, like, if I'm taking the recycling out, oh, I'm just grateful and thanks for getting the recycling. Appreciate it. No climate change down here. Nah. I'm waiting to throw things on the trash. Pick that up, peasant. Oh, and I brought donuts in today. Nah, I'm good. Much obliged, caller in Florida. Disgraceful all the way. Let's see. Number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have comments here to share, proceed.
Greetings, Gus. And greetings to everyone. You guys cued me right in with the self-respect issue in the workplace. It's not the most important thing as a non-white person in the workplace, but it is something to always be aware of, to be attended to. I'll first start off with the distinction of having your name properly addressed and not a shortening of it or some sort of derivative of your name. Once you have informed a person what your name is, or, you know, like the job that I was on, you had a name tag. It's sitting right up there on your chest. As far as they're concerned, I would not allow anyone, especially a white person, well, a white person included, to address me in a way that that's not acceptable to me. First, start off with the instance of there are two Olympic athletes, both are female. One had the second fastest time in the world in a 200-meter dash. Her name is Gabrielle Thomas. She's from Atlanta, Georgia. I can't remember her last name, but anyway, she's a gymnast. She may have been to the Olympics before. And I just can't stand it every time I hear it. They call these two ladies Gabby. They call these two ladies Gabby. Gabby this, Gabby that. And from my understanding, Gabby is
Another alternate definition is someone who runs their mouth a lot. You know, I think that's where I think I've heard that term before. And it's constantly in the press. They never identify their name as Gabriel, which is probably on their birth certificates. I don't know what they think about it because I haven't heard any report on their behalf. But I'm expanding this beyond just these two known people in the press all the time because they're professional athletes. But this also happens in the typical workplace. Black males whose name is William, they may accept the term Bill, but they're called Willie. You know, things like that, which is, you know, rather aggravating. It's aggravating to me. And there's been times where my name would be shortened, but I didn't tolerate it. I didn't tolerate it at all. I wouldn't answer the person, or after I've gotten tired of reminding them on how I want my name to be pronounced, or I would, you know, just continuously remind them of that. Self-respect, great example took place a couple of days ago. It was brought to my attention. Deion Sanders, Coach Deion Sanders, head football coach of Jackson State University. As I would figure most of y'all know that, you know, athletic coaches on the high school, college and professional levels, they normally have interviews of different types. And that's what Mr. Sanders was going through, an interview. And it started right off with the white person that was interviewing him, identifying him as Deion. Coach Deion basically stopped him. Coach Sanders stopped him right in the middle of whatever else he was going to say and stated to him, basically, no, you're not going to call me Deion. You don't call Coach Saban, Nick Saban, you don't call him Nick. The white person basically lied and stated, yes, he does. And nobody had that type of presentation with Saban. He definitely would say something, if not curse you out. And in turn, what Deion did, just got up, took the microphone away from himself and left absent from the interview. And so I thought that was a great example of self-respect. Most cases on a job, you have to establish I'm going to use a metaphor, some sort of barrier between yourself and your other employees, or they would constantly aggravate you on a daily basis if you don't establish that, male or female. It would be my advice to get that established as soon as possible. Speak directly to the issue, you know. And it would make your day a lot better. I put it that way. It'd make your day a lot better. And that's all I have to report today. It was just a thought came to my mind. Thank you for listening.
I did see that with Deion Sanders, where he was doing the press conference and they called him Deion. Said, oh, absolutely not. Walked off. I saw a number of white people afterwards where they said, they're like, hey, wait a minute, he's being too sensitive. You know, Coach Saban, at Alabama. He's white. That, you know, they have done press conferences and said, hey, Nick, what do you think about the game plan for this weekend? Nick, what do you think about that defense? What do you know? That sort of thing. They didn't immediately, like, put a video reel to evidence this, so had to see. But I did hear lots of folks say that. But in my view, right on for Mr. Or Coach Sanders, either or, Mr. or Coach Sanders, Hall of Famer, Super Bowl champion multiple times. Absolutely. Having folks, because it's so casual, the way that they just slide right into that, like you said, the nicknames and all the rest of it, as opposed to Gabrielle, it being Gabby. I guess this time around, it's Gabrielle Thomas. I think it was way back in 2012 when it was in England, so-called. It was Gabrielle Douglas, and they did the same thing, shortening her name to Gabby. And I don't know about Gabrielle Thomas, but I know Gabrielle Douglas in 2012 when she was a gymnast and won gold medals and all that. She did an interview with Oprah Winfrey where she stated explicitly, I prefer Gabrielle. It sounds more elegant.
Right.
Just what you said. Like, Gabby, they say someone who talks a lot. They'll say, that Al Sharpton, he just gabs and gabs and gabs. Like, I don't want to listen to him. I mean, that's generally the way that they use gabs. It's not even that someone talks about who talks a lot that I enjoy listening to. It's generally just someone who talks and talks and talks and talks and talks and gossip and that type of thing. So it's not exactly a pleasant modifier, I'll say, or verb, I'll say. But yeah, Gabrielle Dion.
I did some research.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did research with and listened to some interviews with Coach Saban, University of Alabama, and because he has a lot of them, he has a lot of interviews and whatnot. And every last time where he pointed to the reporter, the person addressed him as Coach Saban.
Mm.
One would have to know what type of attitude that Nick Saban has. He doesn't play that. He has a type of attitude to where even his players would not dump Gatorade on him. He does not get happy about it at all. I think somebody did that to him once, and the look that he had on his face, kind of like told all of the other players, don't ever do that to me again. So I know that doesn't happen. If it does happen, it's very rare where somebody addresses him as something other than Coach Saban. So, you know, that Dion was spot on his explanation to this white person, you know, as far as what he was doing. And it has nothing to do with football. It actually has nothing to do with football, because I have saw this on the job that I was on, and other people have reported to be similar situations that take place on their jobs, whereas a white person would get a feeler of you. They would do something to you and try to manufacture it into being a joke. Oh, I was just playing. That sort of thing. It's a con game type of thing to get inside with that person. And you have to be aware of it, and if it happens to you, you have to stop it as soon as possible. You know, job that I was on, the next thing you know, you have somebody's scrotum on your forehead if you keep relenting to white people's jokes and shenanigans and that sort of thing. You end up you know, with something kind of severe. Yeah. That's it.
Black self-respect, man. Very important. Establishing boundaries, being professional. Safety, can't say it enough. safety. And Mr. Saban, this is an individual classified as white who, because of privileged black male athletes in the state of Alabama, even though they recruit, you know, all over, mostly in the state of Alabama, has got himself, I think he's right at around $10 million per year, Mr. Saban. So all of that attitude, I think easily one of the highest paid coaches in college football. And even this is workplace racism, too, with the new suit. Now these athletes can be compensated. Nick Saban was asked, I need to go back and see if they called him Nick or did they say Coach Saban. He was asked about the compensation for these young players. He did not seem satisfied. Apparently, their young freshman QB, who I believe might be a black male, they said he's already inked almost $1 million in endorsements and has not played one game. Nick Saban was hot, like, man, I had to get out here and work all these years to get $10 million, and this 18-year-old's got $1 million and hasn't done squat. Like, what kind of nonsense? And hey, man. Oh, and he added.
I think he's the highest paid state employee in the state of Alabama.
Oh, for sure. That's all that matters there. They roll tide. But he was upset about this young fella getting. He added, he said, the reason that he's getting that is because of our program. Like, this nigga is coming in here and leeching off of everything that we have built in the great state of Alabama. Like, get out of here. The caller, let's see, our caller we have, Miss Totally, might be overseas. Did you have comments here to share as well? Oops. Thought I did it. There we go. Let's try it again.
Gus T. Renegade.
That would be me. Yes, sir. You're being heard. Oh, let's get a timestamp if we could, please.
I can be heard. That's good. Gus, I would like to make a contribution, if that's okay.
Oh, absolutely, sir. If I could make a request, could we get a timestamp? What time is it where you're calling in from, sir?
Oh, let me see. It's approximately 10 to 4 in the morning, Gus.
Thank you kindly.
Did you get that?
Top of the morning to you, sir. Feel free to share.
Okay. First of all, to the firefighter, the use of the word Gabby, I was impressed that he brought it to the table. It's a phrase that we would use, or they would use in England, as a snide remark, a remark that isn't really pleasant. It's to say somebody's showing off. As you said, talk too much, boastful talk. So I'd just like to say that's my definition of the word Gabby, if that makes sense to you.
Makes absolutely logical sense, sir. Absolutely, absolutely. Same way the word is used here in terms of gab, someone that you don't want to listen to at all. It's quite a stretch from Gabrielle. Yeah, much obliged for retired fire bringing. Did you want to share, sir? Calling from the UK, I believe.
Well, the timestamp is a UK stamp, that's for sure. But on this platform, if it's possible, Gus, with your permission, just like you say, Thomas from New York and retired firefighter from Florida, if it's possible, could you refer to me as unknown from the unknown galaxy? I can tell you the reason why at a later stage, but if it's possible, that's how I'd like to be referred to.
Just making sure I heard it correctly. Unknown galaxy? Is that what you said? The unknown galaxy?
Oh. Yes, unknown. That's me from the unknown galaxy. Yes.
The unknown galaxy.
And I would like, yeah, I can fill you in on that at a later stage. But another thing I'd like to bring to the table as we're talking about workplace racism, it might not affect the American audience, but we have a Home Secretary in England. Her name is Priti Patel. And today, they said, as the police force, they've all got together and they said, we do not have confidence in the Home Secretary, Priti Patel. Now, she's a lady of color, Indian extraction, I believe. Her name is Patel. And I just thought I'd share that with you. Because if they don't have confidence in her, Gus, the police force, I think that would cause a lot of trouble down the line. And the reason why I brought that to you, Gus, is that there was a previous Home Secretary by the name of Theresa May. And she slashed the police numbers. She reduced their pay. And she had many bad things to say about them. And they didn't call her any names, or they didn't lose confidence in her. They just moaned and grumbled at how badly they've been treated by her. But they didn't at any point say, oh, we lost confidence in the Home Secretary. And the same with the previous Home Secretaries before Theresa May. There wasn't a bad word said about them. They just moaned and grumbled. But as for losing confidence in this first Black Home Secretary, or woman of color, I just thought I'd bring that to you to find out your views and what you might think about that. She is the boss of the police, in a kind of way.
How interesting. Now, I didn't know about all of this controversy with Home Secretary Patel until you brought it to our attention. I'm just looking online. I'm at nation.lk. Ministers defend Priti Patel, insisting she suffers online racist abuse. Now, this is all connected to the Euro Cup from just last week when they were terrorizing these black players on the team. I'm not going to read the whole report. They just add a little. They say ministers have backed...
Yeah, but that's not the article I'm discussing. The article I'm discussing might be fresher than the one you're reading about the football. This is about she froze their pay. So they didn't get a pay cut. They didn't get a pay rise. She froze their pay. Whereas Theresa May cut their pay and cut the police numbers. And they didn't lose confidence in her. But Ms. Patel, she just froze their pay. So it didn't go up or down. But yet they lost confidence in her, the black woman. Yeah. So that's the kind of point I'm making. The football, I have no interest. But she does receive racist comments, like we all do, Gus. Mr. Renegade, sorry.
Now that is wacky. He said no interest in the football. That is wacky anywhere in the world to say. That is important. Where I guess they've been fussing about her for a long time, but wow, for a non-white person to be touching the pay of white enforcement officials, like, wow. I'm not surprised at all to hear that they're furious. Like, Theresa May is a white woman, unless I'm confused. I'm sure they weren't pleased about
her.
That's correct. Yeah. I'm sure they weren't pleased about her either, but I mean, she is at least white. To have some non-white woman coming in and touching our pay at all, whether it's frozen or like, who, what is the world coming to? Like, you know, like, I'm not surprised about that at all. Like, I'm sure that's same thing I said before. That's probably not even the tip of the iceberg, especially if she's been like talking about racism at all, what happened with the football or anything else. And then you have the audacity to start meddling in our pay. Ugh.
Yeah.
Public enemy number one, I'm sure she is.
Yes, I do agree with you, and I do enjoy your show, and I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to express my views.
Much obliged, being up so I was going to say late at night, I guess early in the morning for Saturday, the Unknown Galaxy, ringing in all the way other side of the pond, we'll say, to chime in both. It was the 2012. They were over there where you were when it was. They weren't calling her Gabrielle Douglas. They were calling her Gabby Douglas deliberately. And she's supposed to be the doll of the Olympics. And everybody loved her over in London 2012. And Gabby Douglas. We basically did anybody listen to something you can get in 30 seconds? Everybody satisfied?
Can you hear it?
Yes, sir.
Yes, real quick, I just wanted to ask the caller from Florida. I'm normally inspired by his statement that his job location. I wanted to know, does he recommend people, other victims, to use the terminology that he uses as far as when a situation comes up? And like you said earlier, to say you're treating like a slave, does he recommend people to do it that way? I just wanted to ask him that quick question, though. Thank you, Gus.
How interesting. Our caller at the courthouse, based on the results, would you recommend other folks use that same type of phrasing, that you're treating me like a slave?
Ooh, that is a good question. I guess it would depend on if you're comfortable with it and how long you've been there. That would be my response, because like, I've been there 10 years. So I kind of like studied the environment. So that would be my response. Now, if you were new there, you know, I would be more so just trying to ask questions or not. But I would also just say, like how I begun it, it would be dependent upon if you felt comfortable saying it yourself.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir.
Study your environment. Very important. Something we should be doing all the time, not just spectating. Even if you're not being mistreated, study the folks that you are around so that you can make better decisions. What you say, what you don't say, what you do, what you don't do. Man, hope it was worthy of everyone's time and energy. I guess your Friday evening, that's normally the way I say it, when worthy of your Saturday morning too, I guess, for all the folks who dialed in wherever you happen to be in the known universe, or whether you listen live or to the archive, hope it was worthy of your time and energy. We'll be here tomorrow, compensatory call-in, normal time, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. I guess, ooh, is that 6? I think so. Is it 9 to 6? 5. Tomorrow, I think we'll be 5 a.m. UK time. We'll be live for folks in different parts of the planet. And then Monday, we should be here, white woman Amy Schmidt. She should be here normal time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. We will discuss her book, Right of Way, which discusses the extraordinary number of black deaths or black non-white deaths on the roadways, and how that too is a part of racism, white supremacy. To that one, I just, Daryl Deadman, could add a whole lot of other things, but the name Daryl Deadman, I think it's been 10 years since that went down as well. Anyway, I guess they say strive for accuracy, so the time difference is 8 hours, so it'll actually be on 2 a.m. Saturday, the compensatory call-in for folks in the UK. All of that said, sobriety would be best. In the system of white supremacy, we will need high-functioning brain computers to solve this problem. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled if you're going to be out and about. And this is not a time to be confronting strangers, especially if you're in the States. Lots of new gun owners, lots of stress folks, lots of shootings over the past year and a half or so. I would be very alert, cautious when you are out and about in public. If someone is being hostile and rowdy, this is not the time to be confronting them, having verbal confrontations with strangers. If anything, exit. If you didn't leave your residence prepared to kill and or die, exit. You have no idea if this person, this stranger, is armed. You have no idea if they have an armed entourage with them. If you're in a vehicle, you're not on the cell phone. If you're driving, just doing the small things that we can to minimize contact with enforcement officers, badge or no. All of that said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in. No name calling, no gossiping. Really easy steps victims of racism can take that would have a dramatic impact on solving this problem. Really, no name calling. You can look at no name calling and no gossiping as a part of a counter-racist safety plan for victims of white supremacy in minimizing conflict, one of our major priorities for counter-racism. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.